Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Daf Hey. We will begin at the top line. You'll notice that we have a crown shape that highlights the name Runya. You'll see there are two meisim, two events involving Runya and Ravina. So we begin Runya. He had a field, Akfe Ravina Me'arba Ruchoisov, and he was surrounded by Ravina on four sides. Omar Le, Havli Kama de Gadri. Now, when we say that Ravina surrounded him on four sides, we should also point out that there were fences between Runya's field and Ravina's field that Ravina had put up. And Ravina is now requesting for Runya to participate in the cost of those fences. So he says, and this is his first offering, pay me for the value of the fences as they are. Lo yohivle. And yet Runya did not cooperate. He did not give him. Havli, so a second suggestion. Havli lefi demei konabizol. Pay me the value of four fences according to the, we'll call it the low rate of konim bezol, the value of setting up fences made of reeds. Lo yohivle, and Runya didn't pay for that either. Havli agar netirusa. So Ravina asked, or at least pay me for the cost of hiring a guard, which is the least of these three amounts. Lo yohiv le, and Runya didn't pay for that either. Yumachad haveka godar dikli. One day Runya was collecting or harvesting dates from date palms. Omar le larise. Ravina said to his sharecropper, Zil shkol mine kibura dahini. Go take from him, in front of him, not as an act of stealthful theft, but take from in front of him, in his presence, a cluster of dates. So the sharecropper, Ravina's sharecropper, went to bring them. Roma Bekola, and Runya let out a shout, what are you doing? What are you taking them? Omale, Ravina said, oh, Golis Daitoch, you have revealed the Menach Nichaloch that you are happy, you are satisfied that you have protection. In other words, when up till now you didn't want to participate in any of the cost offenses, one might have thought that you couldn't care less about your property and your produce. But that's not the case. Here we see that you are concerned. Lo yehe elo izo be'alma. Let it be nothing more than a mere goat encroaching on your property. Mi lo boy netirusa. Wouldn't you need some protection from that, from the threat of the goat? Omar le, so Runya responded, Iza ba'alma lechli ebaya. As far as a goat is concerned, all that I would need is to scare them, to shout at them. Omar le, so Ravina says, even so, v'lo gavra boyis de michli le law, wouldn't you need a person to do that? So you still need some form of protection, and therefore you have to contribute to the fences. Also, the kame de Rava. So the case was brought to Rava. Omar le, Rava said to Runya, Zil paise b'mai de'ifayis. You ought to appease him with the amount that he was willing to accept. Nay, there was a very low rate that Ravina was willing to accept, the amount that it would cost to hire a guard, and he agreed to that. Velo, if you don't pay him at least that small amount, do'inina loch dino, the word do'inina, like the word din, it's I will rule the law regarding you, kiravhuna aliba derabiosi. And if you look back at daf dalet omid beis, you can see we have an arrow pointing to that, you would find the parallel arrow back there, and Rav Huna Aliba de Rabbi Yossi is the opinion that the inner guy will have to contribute according to the value of the existing fences, which is the highest amount. So take advantage of the fact that Ravina is willing to settle with you on the smallest amount. He goes, otherwise, if you don't pay that, I'm going to rule for you the ruling of Rav Huna according to Rav Yossi. Now we have another incident. Runya Zovan Aro Amitzra de Ravina. And I should point out, and I've been trying to do that along the way, you should be using the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that accompany this most of this Masechta as we go sugya by sugya. So here we have a description of Runya buying a field on the border of fields of Ravina. Tosus will touch on the issue of what is there any connection between this story and the story before. Is it a connection only in terms of names, or maybe something beyond that? But in the meantime, Runya bought a field on the border of Ravina. Sova Ravina Lisluki. Ravina thought, in other words, he had this initial thinking that he can remove Runya from that field and purchase it himself. Mishum Dino de Bar Metzra, based on the laws of Bar Metzra. That law states that if a property is for sale, the person that has, say, first crack at buying that property is the one who has an existing border on that property. So we described Runya as buying a piece of land on the border of Ravino's fields. The initial appearance of the case is that Runya is an outsider, and Ravina should have first crack at it. And so Ravina thought that I have a right to remove Ravina from this purchase and buy it myself. Amarle Rav Safra Brei de Rav Yeva le Ravina. Rav Safra appealed to Ravina with the following saying, and as we read it in the Gemara, it's a very cryptic remark. We'll notice Rashi has several opinions, maybe even three opinions, as to what this remark is. And there's also an extensive discussion in the Tosfos regarding this remark. So in the meantime, we'll just superficially touch on it. Rav Safra says to Ravina, Amrinshi, there's a common saying, Arba'a l'tzala, arba'a l'tzalala. The first pshat in Rashi, let's take a look at it briefly, recognizing that there's a much lengthier discussion on this, which I would prefer to get back to when we reach it in our Tosfos stage of study. But in the meantime, Rashi starts off Arba Litzola Varba Litzola Ani Shomati. Rashi says, I heard. Tzola is Ratzon Oni, is a person who makes leather products, and he's a Ratzon Oni, means a poor leather maker. Vitzolala Ratzon Oshir. And Tzolala is the same profession, but a man of means. And thusly, the Rav, that's Rav Safra, said to Ravina, Arba kikros tzrichim l'ratzon oni l'macholos beso l'yom kemo shetzrichim l'oshir. A poor man needs the same amount of food to eat as a rich man. V'zeh oni hu. And he, referring to Runya, is a poor man. V'tzorach lo hasolo l'parnoso. And he needs the field for his income. Ukeshem Sha'ata Oimer Lo Histalik Me'olai Bedino de Bar Metzra, just like you are claiming that Runya should leave based on the law of Bar Metzra, Mishom, and Bar Metzra is based on a posik, V'yosisa Yoshev HaTov. You should do the right thing, that if you have one field and there are two potential purchasers, the right thing is to give it to the one who has a common border with that field. It makes it easier for him to plow a neighboring field rather than a field located far away from his existing field. that's the basis of Dina de Bar Mitzra, meaning do the right thing. Kach ani omer loch, so to I say to you, Ravina, asei yoshev etov la'oni zeh v'altis alkehu. Do the right thing, have compassion. That's merachamim bedin, which is a concept that we'll see developed a little later by the Tosfos. Be merciful and don't remove him. And Rashi goes on with reservations about that pirush of those words, but I think that you get the flavor, at least for right now. Rav Safra was appealing to Ravina, don't push him off based on your claim of Bar Mitzvah. Now, at this point, we will turn to the Tosfos, the second Tosfos that you see on the page. Is Dibur Masel V'i Lo Do'inana, and at this point we just want to remind ourselves in the Gemara, when the case was brought to Rava involving Runya and his hesitance, his resistance to contributing to the fences that separated between him and the surrounding fields of Ravina. So Rava said, if you don't pay the minimum amount, then I'm going to rule that you're going to have to pay the maximum amount. Tosfos, ve'ilo do'inina loch kerav huna aliba de Rav Yosi. Ksas hoyanire shelo lahafchido hoya omer kein. It appears that Rava was not saying what he did with in the attempt to cause fear, to simply frighten Runya. Midelo ko'omar, you'll notice we have some triangles. These are examples of what might have been said if the intention was to cause fright. From the fact that he did not say the following, v'ilo, and if not, if you don't cooperate, magvino la padno minoch, I'm going to collect your house from you. I'm going to repossess your house. That phrase, if that would have been said to Runya, that would have been a statement trying to put the fear of the law in his heart. Oh, another possible fearsome statement would have been, Mochinoloch besilva delo mova doma. Before a literal translation, that phrase means, I will excommunicate you. Now, the literal translation of that is, I will strike you with a thorn that does not shed blood. And as we just said, it means I will excommunicate you. So since phrases like that were not leveled at Runya, Rafa was saying what he felt was the letter of the law. That if you don't pay this minimum amount that Ravina has offered, then I'm gonna make you pay the full amount, which is the law. That was not a statement of just an attempt to cause fright. The afagav de belulov hagozel amar Shmuel lano de mezavni aso. Even though in Maseches Sukkah, in the third perek, Shmuel addressed vendors of the hadasim in the mitzvah of lulav. And they were selling the hadasim at jacked up rates. He said to them, "Ashvu zevinaychu, I want you to lower your prices. The e lo, and if not, darshinon lechu kerbi tarfen. I will rule like the opinion of Rabbi Tarfen, who holds that you can fulfill the mitzvah of hadasim, even with hadasim that are faulty, with broken tip hadasim, which are very cheap." So you see a similar reaction. Notice we've used a dashed underline to draw your attention to the similar expressions. In our case, we have the ilo, and if you don't cooperate, do'inenoch kiravuna. And here you have Shmuel saying the ilo, and if you don't cooperate, then I'm going to rule like Rabbi Tarfen. V'dochi hashas hasam, we're following the gears of the Marek Kain, and the Shas rejects that. The ach lahafchidam levad hoya omer kain. Shmuel was saying that not because he really held that Rabbi Tarfon is the way to rule, but he said it only to fear, to cause fear in their hearts, to motivate them to lower their prices. Hacha Nirat. Here, however, in our case of Rava and his ruling concerning Runya, the Hachi Svirole. This is really what Rava holds, Kid Pirashti, as I explained, namely that Rava holds that by letter of the law, the beneficiary of fences could be made to contribute the full expenses involved in putting up those fences. And as Tosha said before, if Rava was trying to just scare, merely scare him, he would have said something else. V'od, and furthermore, mide ka'amale zeal paisei b'may defayis, go and appease him with that which he was willing to accept, namely the low rate. Mashma de min hadin hayalo yoiser. Accept his appeasement gives one the impression that if you were trying to find out what's the letter of the law, he would have had to pay more. Him lo bishvil shikvar nespais, if not for the fact that that Ravin already had accepted, was appeased, had accepted appeasement at the lower rate. So Tosis makes the point that that the letter of the law, as far as Rava is concerned, really was that the beneficiary of the fences would have to pay the full rate. Now we turn our attention to the next Tosfos, Arba Litzola. However, before we actually study the Tosfos, let us go through the Rashi. We mentioned before that in order to appreciate the points that Tosfos will make, it would be of benefit for us to do the Rashi. Well, we saw the first approach already in the Rashi, and now let's pick up where we left off. Vayesh Legamgein. Rashi says that the pshat that I heard is something that is questionable. Deha'or, the word, or is leather. Leather korit sola, v'aloha ratzon, and not the leather, we'll call the leather maker. Leather maker, we'll use that term, but we're referring to, obviously, a person doesn't make leather, that God created in the animals, but it's the one who makes leather products. So we'll just refer to him as the leather maker. The leather maker is not called by the word tzola. The word tzola is a reference to the leather itself, to the skins, the leather itself. Kinamrinon be'almo, my dargish. Here Rashi quotes a Gemara Nedarim, where the Gemara asks, what is the meaning of a dargish? Arsa de tzola, it's a leather bed. See, you see the word tzola in the context of a reference to the leather, not the leather maker. The Omer Ani, and now Rashi presents his pshat, Runya, Ratzon Hoya, Runya was a leather maker, V'noisein Oireis La'abdonim, and he would give skins to tanners, La'asos mehem, in the anticipation of making from them shoes, La'asos mehem min olim, no more shoes, L'mochron b'shuk, to sell them in the market. V'kach omar lo Rav Safra l'Ravina. Rav Safra, who was appealing to Ravina to release his hold on the field in favor of Runya. Runya had bought the field and Ravina was claiming ownership rights to first rights based on Bar Metzra. Rav Safra appealed to Ravina and said, "He'oni ze tzchor muat." This poor man has little income. Shehut tzorach litein tzchar harbe la'abdonim. He has to pay a lot of money for to the tanners. The Amri Inshi people say, "Arba zuzi l'tzorach mekach or 4 zuz for the purpose of purchasing the raw leather." That's the tzola that we saw before. And the arba zuzi l'schar abdonim, the vahinu tzola, and another 4 zuz has to be paid to the tanners. So that's 4 zuz for the raw material, 4 zuz to the tanner, and all of that's before the leather maker begins to realize any profits. L'fikach, therefore, ase yoshev etov v'ti lo sade zu l'parnosas beso. do the right thing and be merciful and leave him be so that he can have the field as an additional source of income. Now we see Hago, which would represent a third Pirush. Hago, an addendum. Dalid Arba Litzola, what does that mean? Arba Kikros Tzorech La'abdon Oni, four loaves are needed for the Abdon, the tanner who is poor. V'arba Litzola, Kamo Kane, Dalid Litzorech Abdon Oshir, four loaves for the rich tanner. Umoshalu Keneged Runya, this is an example, an analogy regarding Runya. Shahoya lo sode achas besoch sodos shel Ravina, kide omar liel. And here we have a different setup than what you may have imagined. Up till now, we had fields owned by Ravina, and outside one of those fields was the field in question. That was how we were thinking till now. And Runya came along and bought that outside field, and Ravina was claiming, you know, you've got to go because I'm the bar metzra. However, according to this pshat, the Hagor, the field that Runya purchased was a field located within the four fields that Ravina had already owned. As we said before, the Ravina Akfe Me'arba Ruchoy Sov, the Achshav Kona Loi Soda Eitzel Meitza Ravina, and now he is buying a field next to Ravina's border, Umafsik Soda Ravina Bein Sodoy Sov, and the field owned by Ravina is separating the fields of Runya. So if we just let us go over this again, according to this pshat in the story between Runya and Ravina, we mentioned before that Runya had owned a field that was surrounded by the four fields of Ravina. According to the first two Pirushim of Rashi, we didn't see any tie-in between this story and the story before. But according to this last pshat, there is a connection. The field, this basically is a continuation of the story above, in the sense that Runya had that owned the internal field, and now he is buying a field on the outside of Ravina's fields. And that's what Rashi is saying here, that Umafsik Soda Ravina Bein Sadoisov. Ravina's field was now separating between the two fields that would be owned by Runya. The Omerle Rav Safra Le Ravina, Shiasa Yosheva Tov, do the right thing, Loniach Le Runya Oisa Soda De Achshav Yelo Shnayim, leave him be so that he can now have two fields. Shikamosh Shitzorch Shmiro Lishne Sodos Tzorch Gamkein Liechod U Mikamot Vorim Yitzias Echad Merubak Yitzias Shnayim Venimsa Runya Mistakir. The cost for watching two fields is the same as the cost of watching one field, for whatever reason. And therefore, with the Runya being able to now own two fields, he'll benefit in that sense that he's not going to have to lay out any additional guarding costs. Now we turn our attention to the Tosfos itself, himself, Dibor Masil, Arba Letzola, Lepirush HaKuntris, Makshe Rabbeinu Tam. According to the explanation that Rashi gave, there was a discussion in the Meforshim as to exactly which one of the Pirushim that Rashi gave is the attention here of Rabbeinu Tam, but we'll see from the thrust it's not necessarily limited to one of the explanations for the time being. That is, according to Rashi, L'Pirusha Kuntris Makshe Rabbeinu Tam Ha Ein Merachmin Bedin. We know from Maseches Ksubis that when it comes to a legal case, we call it Din Torah, comes to law, deciding of law, the issue of mercifulness and compassion does not enter the picture in order to we'll say change the outcome from what would be the letter of the law. So that even though it may be that Runya was a poor man, that cannot be a factor to influence the outcome. And yet, according to Rashi, it seemed that Rav Safra was saying to Ravina, though you may have a claim by letter of the law, take into consideration that he's a poor man and let him benefit, leave him be. So Rabbeinu Tam says that that's not an acceptable way of settling legal matters. By the way, you notice we have a number of different geometric forms in this Tosfos. The triangle represents questions of Rabbeinu Tam on Rashi, and the you'll see that we've used a crown shape to highlight Rabbeinu Tam. Eventually, a diamond will appear, and they highlight the explanations of Rabbeinu Tam. And later in the Tosfos, Rabbi Avrom's explanation regarding the incident involving Runya and Ravina. So we continue. Viod, we continue with questions of Rabbeinu Tam on the Rashi. Viod, Dika Omar, it said in the Gemara the following expression, Sovar Ravina Lisluki. Ravina had the initial thinking to remove Runya. Mashma, that loshon, that expression of sovar, gives the impression sheta'a Ravina, that Ravina made some kind of mistake. And when you learn Rashi, we don't see any mistake on the part of Ravina. Viod, and a third question, ma shayich kan hai maise. And now, this question would not be a question that we would say that would be appropriate according to the third explanation we saw in Rashi, the Hagol. Now, having seen these questions that Rabbeinu Tam raises, let me correct myself. Let us continue with the questions that Rabbeinu Tam raises. V'oid ma shayich kan hai maisa. What is the relevance of having this incident as far as Rashi is concerned? According to the two Pirushim of Rashi, what is the purchase of Runya, of a field that borders on Ravina's property, what's the story doing in our sugya? This house marking, by the way, is needed for later on in the Tosfos where we want to connect points, so we have this as a handy reference. So imishum da'iri b'Ravina v'Runya, if the only connection is names, that here we have a second story involving Runya and Ravina. Well, then, if you're into, let's say, name collecting or stories with same names, Lysi Nami Maisa Damakabel, you could have quoted the story in Maseches Bava Metzia, Runya Shaslu de Ravina Hava. There you have a description of Runya as being a worker. Shaslu literally is a tree planter. He worked for Ravina. So then our Gemara should have just made mention of that story. V'hanach trei uvdi d'shmeitzin laisi nami hosam, and the two stories over here should be quoted over there. So far, according to Rashi's approach, there doesn't seem to be any connection between this second story and the first story other than names. And if it was a name connection, then we're missing the third story as part of the collection. V'oid, and a further objection, Tetzola hu or. Now, before we weren't specific as to which one of the Pirushim Rabbeinu Tam was asking on, but right now you can see that he is, we'll say, Rabbeinu Tam is attacking the first pshat in Rashi. It's interesting to note that Rashi himself had questioned that first pshat where Rashi said v'yesh legamgen dor koritzala. So Rabbeinu Tam is asking the same question, assuming that the pshat that Rabbeinu Tam, the only pshat that Rabbeinu Tam heard in the Rashi was that first pshat. So this would be a very relevant or pertinent question, and that is that tzola is leather and not the leather maker, as Rashi said in his first opinion. Kidamrinon my dargish arsa de tzola, quoting the same thing that Rashi quotes. By the way, you can see that the reference of the Masor Sashas here is to a Gemara Moi Kotten. In Rashi, the reference was to a Gemara Nidorim, but they're one and the same, we'll just say this, the same Gemara that appears in two places. And we see there that the Gemara says, what's a dargish? It's an arsa de tzola, means a leather bed. So that tzola is leather, not the leather maker, like Rashi said in the first pshat. V'omer Rabbeinu Tam. And now Rabbeinu Tam presents his explanation. Dezovan Aro Amitzra de Ravina, the reference in the Gemara to Runya buying a field on the border of Ravina. Here we have an illustration on that we've included. It's also available in the Pirush Chai. If you see, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, Ravina owns fields surrounding two parcels of land. One of the two parcels of land is a field already owned by Ravina. So you have two internal fields with regard to the fields Ravina owned, two internal fields, that one of which was owned by Runya, and the second field was up for sale, and that is the field that Runya bought, that second field. Hainu, let's continue in our Tosfos text. Hainu, Ameitzar, Oysom Sodois, the Akfe Ravina Me'arba Ruchois. The field that Runya bought was a field that was surrounded by Ravina on all sides. And by the way, with this, you can see why this mice of Runya buying a field on the border of Ravina is featured here. It's a continuation of the mice above, where Ravina was described as owning fields surrounding Runya. So that, and by the way, in our markings, you see that's why we have a house marking at this point to connect it with the question raised by Rabbeinu Tam above. So here Rabbeinu Tam is offering his own explanation, and therefore we see the connection. And let's continue then in the Tosfos. The field that Runya bought on Ravina's property was a field that was on the border of those fields that Ravina had been surrounding, that we saw before. V'haya Ravina Matzron B'Gimel Ruchos. If you look at the diagram carefully, you look at the field that Runya bought. Ravina has a common border with that field on three sides. The Runya, on the fourth side of that field, was the field that was already owned by Runya himself. For Runya, Meruach Achas. And Runya had a common border with that purchase field on one side. V'af al gav di omar b'hamakabel. Even though it says in Bova Metzia, hani arba b'nei matzra. If you have four people that have a common border with a particular field that's up for sale, dekodim chad minayu v'zovan, and one of them was Zoriz, and he was diligent and bought that field before the other three neighbors that also had a border with this field. The law is my Zovan Zovan. The one guy who had a common border with the field up for sale, as we said, that field had three other people on the other three sides that also bordered the field, but one of these four neighbors bought the field. what he his purchase is a legitimate purchase. Now, to Runya, he was Kana Mazoman. He had the he bought with alacrity ahead of Ravina. Mikol Mokom. So even though that's the letter of the law, that the one who the Matsron, the border owner, that there are multiple border owners, and the one who is diligent and works with swiftness, his purchase is the purchase. So you would ask yourself, so what was in Ravina's mind? Why was he trying to interfere with Runya's purchase? Mikol Mokom Sova Ravina Lisluki. Ravina thought, and here we're addressing the issue of the mistake that Ravina made. Ravina's thinking, his mistaken thinking, was to Lisluki to remove Runya Mishum Shoya Matsun Migimel Stodin Runya Rak Meruach Achas. Ravina himself had a common border with the field in question on three sides, and Runya had a common border with the field in question only on one side. Ravina thought that gave him the advantage. Oh, Marle Rav Safra responded, Amri Inshi. People say, there's a common saying, Arba Litzola, and he went on to say, Arba Litzola. What is that? Arba Litzol Pirush. Leor Godol. Now notice, you see the word Leor. Or is the problem that Rabbeinu Tam had mentioned before, that the word Sola means leather. So here he's incorporating that into his explanation. And we have several lines. This is a long marking we have for Rav Safra. What was Rav Safra saying to Ravina? The common saying that people have for Litzola, what does that mean? Pirush Leor Godol. For a large piece of leather, tzorach liten la'abdon dalet zuzim. You have to pay 4 zuz for the tanner to prepare a large piece of leather. V'dalet litzolala, what's tzolala? Or katan, a small piece of leather. Klamar tzorach liten mina katan kamo mina godol. The same rate has to be paid for the tanning of a small piece of leather, like a large piece of leather. Sheesh torach bekotan kamo begodol. There's the same amount of effort in tanning a small piece as a large piece. Hachanami, so too, over here, my taimo, what is the reason, the basis of my taimo dina de bar mitzra? Mishum, sheyu kol sedoysev smuchin, sheyucha lechorshim bevasachas. We mentioned this earlier today in our shiur. It's convenient for a person who owns multiple fields to have the fields in a contiguous fashion so that he can continue plowing with the same plowing motion, moving from one field into the next without having to, let's say, load the plow up onto some cart and cart it off to another far away location and then start the plowing process again. When the fields are next to one another, when they're in a contiguous fashion, so then you continue drawing the plow in one motion, so to speak. So that's the reason for the Dina de Bar Mitzra. People who have already a common border with a field up for purchase, they have first crack at it. Let's read those words again. Sheyucha lechorshin bevasachas ulekach hu matzron meruach achas kamo atop migimel ruchos. He has a common border on one side, just like you have a common border on three sides. So that you're thinking that because you have a common border on three sides gives you an advantage, that's a mistake. And with this you can see how Rabbeinu Tam has successfully answered all of the questions that he had raised on Rashi. The idea of Ein Merachem and Bedin. There's no issue here of mercifulness in Din. Rav Safra was not appealing to Ravina to be merciful, but rather he was stating the letter of the law. And the connection between the stories, we can see the connection, according to Rabbeinu Tam, between the earlier story of Ravina surrounding Runya and the issue of the mistake. Yes, according to Rabbeinu Tam, we see how Ravina had a mistaken trend of thought. And, of course, the question concerning the definition of tzolah being leather and not not the leather maker, that too Rabbeinu Tam accounted for in his explanation. So the four questions that Rabbeinu Tam raised that we highlighted with four triangles above, let's say his questions against Rashi, are all answered. Rabbeinu Avram Piresh, the Hach Ara the Zovan Runya Amitzra de Ravina. Rabbeinu Avram has another approach, and that is that the field that Runya bought on the border of Ravina, Hainu Amitzra de Oisin Sodois Shehoya Runya Oris Bohen Kidamrinon Runya Shaslu de Ravina Have. What Rabbeinu Avram does is he takes advantage of the that particular story in Bava Metzia, where it was revealed to us that Runya was a worker for Ravina, and this field that Runya bought was a field that was on the border of fields that on the border of a field that Ravina owned, a field owned by Ravina that Runya himself had been a worker in that field. So Rabbeinu Avram's pshat does not entail, let's say a similar connection like Rabbeinu Tam had. We have a little note, by the way, on the side. It's a note. You see a circled note, and we've written the following: to look in the Marashah, Hakesher Bein Maisa Zeh LeMaisa DeLiel, the connection between, and in the Rabbeinu Avram's pshat, between this incident of Runya buying a field on the border of Ravina, and the incident before, who Shesoda Zu Sherunya Zovan, who Hasoda DeLiel BeMaisa HaKodem. Here we have a technical problem of order of events. Above, we saw Ravina surrounding Runya on four sides. If in your mind's eye you can just put that fact aside and start your whole connection with Runya and Ravina with this incident, namely, Runya, there was a field located, an unowned field, surrounded on four sides by Ravina. And a gentleman by the name of Runya was cultivating Ravina's property. And I remind you, there was an unowned property in the middle of, or surrounded on four sides by Ravina. Runya was not a landowner at all. He was a worker in Ravina's properties. And we continue with the note on the side where we noted that Runya then bought that field that was in the middle. Namely, he bought a field that was located or surrounded on four sides of property owned by Ravina that he, Runya, was working on. Shene mar sham de Ravina hekif es Ravina es Runya bedalid ruchos ukfi shenirim hadvara maisa ze kodam bizman lemaisa kodem. As we mentioned just now, that the order of events would appear that this incident of Runya buying the property came in time sequence before the story above. Rabbeinu Avram Masbir Be'ezes Chus, and Rabbi Avram here in Tosfos is going to explain what right did Runya have. V'lo mishum rachamim, not because of mercifulness, but what right did Runya have? Be'ezes Chus Runya Nechshav Bal Meitza Lo Pochus Me'avina. How can you consider Runya a border owner no less than Ravina? See, at this point, Runya doesn't own any land. Runya is working on fields owned by Ravina, and those fields owned by Ravina happen to surround a piece of land that was at this point, unowned. Up for sale, though. So Runya bought that field. Let's read that again. Just going back one line. Hainu amitzra de oisin sada shea Runya oris bohen. The field that Runya bought was a field that bordered those fields that Runya was working on as a sharecropper. Kidamrinon Runya Shasa de Ravina Habe. As the Gemara in Bava Metzi reveals, Runya was a worker for Ravina. Vahochi Kormale Rav Safra le Ravina. And thusly, Rav Safra said to Ravina to rebuff Ravina in his attempt to push off Runya. Afalpi Shein Runya Baguf Akaka Klum. Even though Runya doesn't have any physical ownership of property that borders on that internal piece of land, Mikol Makom Hayol Shehu Oifdan, since he is a worker on the properties, namely your properties, that border on that field, Harehu Matsron Kamocha, he is considered a border man, a border owner, a border man, just like you. Diamri and she, people say, Arba'a litzala, noisnim dalet zuz al ha'or, ukamokain tzorech litain litzala la, le'uman hama'abed es ha'or. You people pay for the skin itself, and people pay the leather, or the tanner as well. So that, you see, a type of equivalency between the actual item, the leather, and the worker, and the analogy is then there's a balance between the physical field and the one who happens to be present there as a worker on fields bordering the field up for sale. So again, with Rabbeinu Avram, you see that there's a connection between the stories, as we pointed out. There's an element of mistake on the part of Ravina thinking that he has the upper hand, and we have there with that then responses to questions that were raised, and also as far as the word sola is a reference to or the leather itself. According to Rabbeinu Avram, responses to the questions Rabbeinu Tam raised on Rashi. We now turn our attention to the Mishnah. We go back to the Mishnah. The Daf Hey Omed Aleph Kosel Chotzer Shenofal, a wall between two neighbors, partners in a Chotzer, and the wall fell down. Mechayven Oisoi Livnoisoi Ad Arba Omos. Both are obligated to participate in the costs for the wall up till 4 Amos. With a wall 4 amos in height, we prevent hezek riyah, the sugya that we discussed at the beginning of the masechta at great length. Now, we say becheskas shenosan ad shiovi raya shelo nosan. He has the assumed status of having contributed until proof can be brought that he did not contribute. So that if you have one person claiming I paid everything, I'm waiting for you to pay. The other party can say, "What do you mean you're waiting for me to pay? I paid my chelik, my portion." Let's take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah. Becheskas shenasan im omar ha'echad the acher shebonai. If after the wall was built till a height of 4 amos. One said to the other, Ani osisiv mishali, I paid out all the money. Shalo rotzo zelis, and he doesn't want to help me. Vitovo chatziatzi, and he's claiming half the expenses. Vizomer,
And the other one says, Nosati Chelki, I gave my share. Ne'eman, he is believed. And Rashi continues, Ad Shiovi HaTovea, Eidim Shetovoi V'lo Nosan Lo. Until, as the other party is believed to have contributed, until the first party can bring witnesses that will testify, I claimed money from him and he didn't pay me. The Kevon de Chova Olav L'sayo, since he's obligated to contribute till a height of 4 amas, Umishpat ze lakol galui, lo hoya bone mishalo, ela hoya tsoek olav the basin. Since it's obligatory for the other party to help out, no one would have laid out all the money at the outset in the hopes of getting compensation or participation later on. Rather, right at the outset, he would have screamed in court, "Hey, where's your share?" So, since the wall was put up, the other party will be believed to say, "I paid." However, we continue in the Mishnah, Midalet Amos Ulamalon, from 4 Amos and up, Ein Mechaiven Oso. He is not obligated to, the other party is not obligated to contribute to to increased height above 4 Amos. Somach Lo Koisel Acher. The party... we'll say the party who wasn't so happy to contribute, he built within his own property a parallel wall to the new increased height above 4 amas wall. Afalpi shelo nosan olov esatikra. Now, you have to imagine if you're building a parallel wall, and by the way, use the Pirush Chai as often as you can. If this fellow is building within his own property a parallel wall to the divider wall that's more than 4 amas of height, why is he putting up a parallel wall? Yeah, he probably wants to put then the beams across the top of the two walls and have a new enclosed enclosure, a new house, a new an added room or whatever to benefit from that. From the wall that the first guy put up above 4 amas. So by the neighbors putting up a parallel wall, even if he hasn't put a ceiling, crossbeam, tikra is a crossbeams serve as a ceiling, megaglin olav es hakol, he is expected to contribute fully to the to all of the costs of the dividing wall that we're saying that's now above 4 amas. And we say regarding that case, Bechezkas shelo nosan at shovi raya shenosan. It's also assumed that he hasn't paid until he brings proof that he has paid, so that if the first fellow who put the wall, who built the dividing wall above 4 amas is claiming, Where is the participation money? Look, you know, you have a parallel wall in your own property. You certainly want to benefit from this high wall that I put up. It's assumed that that he did not contribute to the increased height until he brings proof that he did. We take a look at the Rashi. Somach lo kaisel acher li acher shebonu ha'echad lemalo midal ramas harbe. After the first guy rebuilt that dividing wall above 4 amas, way above 4 amas, and the other neighbor didn't want to assist in the payments, contribute to the payments of that increased height. And so after that, he then built a parallel wall in his own property, Kedei l'sakech, to cover, to, as we explained before, to put beams across the two walls. V'losesel of tikra, mikaisel l'kaisel, the cross beams going from one wall to the other. Afal pi shelo nosan olav adayin atikra, even if he has not actually put the roof on, so he hasn't actually benefited what we see intention. Megal levas hakol, we we now literally roll upon him everything, meaning force him to contribute to share in all of the expenses. The goli daite the nichole bagbo dehech. He is revealed to us that he is happy with this increased height. And Rashi continues, "Becheskas sheloi nosan ibo harishon v'tavoi ledin liachas shesomachas koisel lekoisel rishon v'yomerlo." If the first guy says after claiming in court at a point after the neighbor put up the parallel wall, v'yomerlo tamely chelkucha b'mashik bati, I want you to contribute to that which I increased the height of the dividing wall. V'zomer osati chelki, and the other guy claims, I gave you my share. Eino namon, that will be edim. He won't be believed in his claim that I paid already. She'ein mishpat ze golui l'chol. This is not so obvious. And by the way, in contrast to what Rashi pointed out before, that it's obvious, it's golui l'chol, up till four amas that you have to contribute. This is not so obvious. The ad she chayvu based in ein osilitein, until the court issues a formal ruling, a person would not be believed. Until a person will not pay until the court issues a formal ruling. Otherwise, people are not given to pay for the increased height. And now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Reish Lakish. The Gemara opens up with a seemingly unrelated discussion, but as is the case in many Gemaras, information from our Mishnah will be featured in settling a machlokis that we'll see in the Gemara now. But in the meantime, we have a machlokis amoroyim Reish Lakish on the one hand, Abaye and Rav on the other. Will a person pay his debt before the deadline? That's the issue. Do people pay up debts before deadlines? Omar Reish Lakish, hakeveya zman l'chavero, ubo bizmano. A person loaned money, and the lender said to the borrower, I want you to pay me by a certain time. And he came, lender came at the deadline. The Omar lo, and the borrower said, Poratich besoch zmani. I paid you earlier. I paid you within the time. Eino namon ulavai shifra bezmano. He's not believed. It should only be that a person should pay on time, let alone pay early. People don't pay early. Abaye v'rova, the Amri Travayu, Ovid, Inish, Depora, Begozimne. People do pay earlier. Zimnin de Misramu le Zuzi. Sometimes people had borrowed money, chance upon money, get money, money Misramu le. It has to do with arriving by chancing upon something that's not necessarily planned out from the beginning, not known at the outset. People in the course of time happen to come on to some money. Omar and the borrower who just now came on to money said, Ezel Ephray, I'm going to go and pay him. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Kihechi delo litradon. Let me pay him so that he doesn't bother me later on. I don't know if you can say, people might say, just to free myself of the pressure later on. I got money now. I know I have more. I have time till the deadline, but let me relieve myself of the pressure right now. That's the gist of kihechi de lo litra, so that he shouldn't come and pressure me later on. So we have a machlokis between Reish Lakish on the one hand, Abaye and Rava on the other hand. Do people pay within the time? You'll notice the use of triangles, and you'll see they appear in alternating directions. These are attempts to decide the issue in different directions. So, Tanan, this is a quote from our Mishnah, hence the connection, hence this. You see why the Machlokis, Reish Lakish, Abaye and Rav appears over here, because we're trying to settle that discussion from information in our Mishnah. This is a quote from the part of the Mishnah dealing with the wall up till 4 amos. And we say, Becheskas shenosan ad shiovi raya shelo nosan. It's assumed that he did pay until proof is brought to the contrary. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances? What was the argument? What was the confrontation between the two parties? Ilemo di omale poratich bismani. If you were to think that the neighbor is saying, I paid up bismani. What does that mean, bismani? Rashi at the top line says, Kishishlamto is goiva arba amos. I paid you at the point you finished the 4 amos. If that's the case, so you don't need the Mishnah to tell me that he's believed. Pshita becheskas shenosan. It's obvious, Rashi says on the second line from the top, Pshita denemon sherezeh zu tainis monoli biodcho velomer ein lucho biodiklum. This is similar to a well-known discussion you find in other Gemaras, where one claims, you owe me a mona, you owe me $100, and the other guy says, I don't owe you anything. And when a person makes that, we call that kofer bakol, on a Torah level, that is a believable claim. So that if that's the case over here, after the wall was completed, the other guy says where, one says, where's my money? The other one says, I paid you already. He is obviously believed. So that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah doesn't have to tell us the obvious. Let's continue in the Gemara. Elo lav di omar le poratich besoch zmani. Rather, the person is saying, when asked for the money, he says, what are you asking me for the money? I paid you early. I paid you before you finished the 4 amos. And what does the Mishnah say? He's believed. Alma, you see from here, the diamond, you can see, highlights the conclusions. Alma, Ovid, Inish, Depare, Besoch, Zmane. This would prove Abaye and Rava's position, that people do pay ahead. Gemara rejects this. The double underline is a rejection. Shiny hacha. This is different. The case of the wall doesn't represent a case of within the time or premature or early. There's no early payment that has relevance to the case of the wall building. Why? The hall safa v'safa, each row of stones that form the wall, each row zimnehu, each row is said to be the basis of a separate payment, so that there isn't any, we don't look at it that the time for payment is only at the completion of the full 4 amos. But payment is due, so to speak, after each row. So, as we said before, the case of the Mishnah does not represent a scenario where you have early payment discuss what's to begin with. Let's continue in the Gemara. Toshma, and now we're going to bring a proof in the opposite direction, where if you skip to the diamond, you can see Alma lo avid inish de parba goes in. So what does it say? This is a quote from the Mishnah referring to the wall above 4 amos, and the neighbor put up a parallel wall. And it's assumed that he didn't pay for the increased height. Becheska shelo nosan ad shiovi raya shenosan. Hechi domi. What are the circumstances? I lemo diomale poratich bismani amailo. Now, what does that mean, poratich bismani? Rashi, I lemo diomale poratich bismani. Kishigomarti es kosli. Remember, we're talking about the guy that put up the parallel wall. And he's saying, when I finished building my parallel wall, which will be the basis of my benefiting from the wall that you built above 4 amos. So when I built my parallel wall, v'yodati kamon ischayafti l'seh b'hagboscha, and after the job was done, I was able to calculate how much my contribution would be toward the wall that you built in the middle above 4 amos. That would be bismani, the point in time that the neighbor completed his parallel wall. if that is that what we're talking about? That he says, I paid you at the time I completed my my parallel wall? Amailo, why should he not be believed? El olav diomale poratich betoch zmani. It must be that he was saying, I paid you before I completed my parallel wall. I paid you for your increased height wall. And what does it say? It says he's not believed until he brings proof that he paid. Alma, you see from here, lo ovid inish depara begozim lay. People do not pay within the time. They don't pay until the very end. So this would seem to prove Reish Lakish's position. The Gemara rejects this. It doesn't prove it. Shiny hacha, this case is different. The Omar, and I think we saw already an allusion to this in the Rashi, because there's a Rashi that we saw much earlier. Shiny hacha, this is different. The Omar, the guy figures, mi yemar de mechayvu li rabbonan. Who says that I'll ever be chayev to pay? Who says that the rabbis would ever order me to pay? So since this guy has this frame of mind that I might never have to pay, that's why he is not believed. Not a function of early payment or whatever else. He doesn't think he'll ever have to pay. So Rashi adds here, therefore, even if he said, Paratich bizmani, I paid you when I finished building my parallel, even then he wouldn't be believed. Rav Popo v'Ravun Rav Yeshua Avdi Ka'abaye v'Rava. So you have Rav Popo and Rav Huna ruling like Abaye and Rava. People will pay prematurely or earlier within the time. Mor Borav Ashi Ovad K'Reish Lakish. And Mor Borav Ashi rules like Reish Lakish, that people do not pay early. Don't basically don't ever expect people to pay early. Vehilchasa k'Reish Lakish, and the Gemara rules like Reish Lakish. People don't pay early, and with that in mind, the Gemara goes on with a very powerful ruling. How far this can take us in halacha? How far? V'afilu miyasmi, even when it comes to collecting from orphans. What's the case? A man borrowed money, and there was a due date for the loan, and he died before the time came. Haha. He died before the time came. Tell me, was the loan paid up? Well, people don't pay early. If you follow Reish Lakish and you rule like Reish Lakish, the loan was certainly not paid up. And as a result, you can collect from Yesaimim even without the need for swearing, which otherwise is the general approach when it comes to collecting from Yesaimim, that you need to swear. As the Gemara now points out, V'afagav the Omamar, even though it has been said, Haba lipora minichsi Yesaimim lo yifra elo b'shvua, one who comes to collect from orphans cannot collect unless he swears. In this case, the collection that the malve, that the lender can make from the orphans, is a collection without having to swear. Based on what? Chazaka lo ofid inish depora begozim nei. There is an assumed status that people will not pay before the deadline, and therefore there is no reason for suspecting that their father had paid. He died before the due date. Therefore, it's solid evidence, as far as we're concerned, that the loan was not paid up. Malva can collect from the Yesaimim, even though in all other cases of attempting to collect from Yesaimim, the Malva, or anyone who was trying to collect from them whatever kind of debt is due, would have to swear before they can collect. We will now turn our attention to a large amount of Tosfos study before we can go on in the Gemara. But I'll just point out ahead of time that the next issue raised in the Gemara is related to what we've discussed, in the sense that the issue of paying prematurely will come up again in the upcoming piece of Gemara. But in the meantime, we're going to turn our attention to the Tosfos on the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara that we've learned. And that means we turn back to Daf Hei Omid Aleph. And we're looking at the Tosfos on the lower part of our Tosfos page. Dibur HaMaskel Me'arba. This is what we saw in the Mishnah. Me'arba Amos Ulamalo Ein Mechayven Oso. From above four amos of height, a person is not obligated to contribute. So if you have a courtyard and a wall is being put up that divides the courtyard with a wall above four amos, so joint contribution is understood up till four amos, but beyond that, no. However, if there was somach lekesel acher, if the neighbor put up a parallel wall, as we explained, with the anticipation of roofing it, putting cross beams between the high wall and now the new wall that he built within his own property, he has to contribute. But we say becheskas shelo nosan. It's assumed, though, that he has not paid for the increased height section of the dividing wall. Tosfos says, "Iri, this is talking about the following circumstances: kagon diad inon de kodam chad viartze lechavrei v'hoya mesarhev, that one arose and tried to gain the agreement and cooperation of the other, and he was resisting. Kidemash malishna, the language would seem to indicate this." Ein mechayven oisoi. That expression of ein mechayven oso indicates that there was an attempt made and he didn't want to cooperate, and we don't obligate him to. That's of course before a parallel wall was built. Ulekach havi becheskas shelo nosan, and therefore we said it's assumed he hasn't paid. V'ein sorach lahamid b'sha'osa chozis, and you don't have to set up the case of the Mishnah where a chozis was put up, where a sign was put up indicating that only one had built the wall. The issue of chozis is something that we've discussed from the beginning of the Masechta, which would be a sign that only one of them contributed. So even without that brought into the discussion, we understand that one had built the laid out the all the funds, built above four amos, and as we said, we know that he tried to gain the cooperation of the other party, and the other party resisted. Tosfos Dibur HaMaschil Afal Pi. We had mentioned in the Mishnah that the party who didn't want to contribute to the above four amma dividing wall, once he puts up a parallel wall, he is obligated. And we said, Afal pi shelo nosan olav es hatikra, even if he hasn't put the roof on it, the crossbeams forming the roof between his own wall and the dividing wall above four ammas, he has to make full contribution to the dividing wall above the four amos as well. Afal gav, even though we have a principle, the zenene vezelo choser poter, where one benefits and it's not at the expense of the other guy, there is exemption. Where you have two parties. One, you find this coming up in many, many places in the Shas, where someone has a house that's not occupied, and I move into your house that you weren't going to rent out anyway, and I live there, so I'm nene, Lo chaser, the owner doesn't lose out by my being in the house. So the one who's moved in is exempt. He doesn't have to pay rent. I've mentioned in other situations that information that we say in our Gemara markings, Tosfos markings, Shiurim, are not to be taken as halacha lamaisa. No practical halacha points should ever be concluded from our recordings. So, but as far as the principle is concerned, where one benefits and it's not at the expense of the other, there's exemption. So here too, one guy, the second party that's putting up the parallel wall, he's going to benefit from that dividing wall. The first guy isn't losing out. The first guy put up a wall more than four amos. What if for whatever reason he wanted to have a very tall wall? When the other party puts up within his own property a parallel wall, it's not causing any loss to the first fellow who put up the wall above four amos. So according to the general rule, when it's zenene, when one benefits and it's not at the expense of the other party, so the beneficiary doesn't have to pay, he's putter. And yet we're saying in our Mishnah that he must contribute to the full cost of the wall, even above the four amos. Why is that? Mikol mokom kevon de goli daite de nichole bahagbo chayov. Since you have an explicit revelation of mindset, that's goli daite, he reveals to us through the building of the parallel wall that he is so happy with the increased height of the dividing wall, he has to contribute. V'chein mashmanami b'ketzer aregel, and similarly in Bava Kama de Komar, there the Gemara says regarding an inner field owner and a surrounding field owner. This, by the way, is what we saw in our previous Gemaras over here in our Masechta. De Godar Taimo de Godar Nikif. The reason that the inner guy has to contribute to the surrounding walls is because he put up the wall around the fourth side of his inner field, separating, giving him total isolation or protection from the guy surrounding him on four sides. Ha makif poter. If the makif, the owner of the surrounding fields, would have put up the fence on the fourth side, separating himself from the inner field owner, the inner field owner would have been exempt. And there in Bava Kama, the Gemara tries to conclude from that, Shma Mino, from here we see Zen and Evezelo Choser Potter, where the inner guy benefits from now being totally protected, totally enclosed, and it's not at the expense of the outer guy. The outer guy wanted, he's the one that put up the fences. He wanted to be fenced off, separated from the inner guy. Potter, the inner guy, is exempt. So the Gemara in Bava Kama tries to draw conclude thusly, that from the case of the Makif and the Nikif, that Zenene Vezelo Chosre is in fact exempt via Filu Hachi. Even so, in that case in Bava Kama, where we just got finished saying if the outer guy put up the fourth side, completely creating complete enclosure of the inner guy, we say nevertheless, afilu hachi, even so, kishamad nikav chayav, if the internal guy put up the fourth side, put up a fence on the fourth side of his internal field, separating himself completely from the outside, he must contribute to the to all of the enclosure. Why? Because by the inner guy putting up the fourth wall, he's goli daite. He's revealing that he is happy with the other walls put up by the outer guy. Therefore, inner guy has to contribute to all of the walls that were, all of the fences that were put up previously. Cain nearly. Thusly, it appears to me that, according to the Tosfos, that even though we have a principle of zenene vezelo choser is poter, when the zenene, when the beneficiary actually does something, does some kind of action which is Megala Daito. Not that he's a mere beneficiary, but he also did an action revealing his satisfaction, then he has to contribute. And that's what we saw in our Mishnah, where the second party put up a parallel wall to the high dividing wall. That's Goli Daite, and that's why he has to pay, even though you would have otherwise thought to say that it's a case of Zenen Vezelo Choser. Inami, another approach to understanding why the second party must contribute to the increased height. Hocha ze choser hu. Here, the first guy is, in fact, losing out by having this guy as his neighbor. She goreim lo shigbia kaisel lamala midal anamas. We'll say the second guy caused the first guy to put the wall up higher than four amos. Kedei shelo ye lo hezek riiyo b'shum inyon mimenu, so that he should be protected. So the first guy should be protected from invasion of privacy, from any possibility that might be. So it seems from the Tosfos that the first guy felt, threatened in terms of privacy invasion from the presence of this second guy that caused him, that forced him, so to speak, to build a wall more than four amas of height. And therefore, you cannot describe this as a case of zenene, where the second guy is benefiting, and zeh lo chaser, where the first guy wasn't losing out. Because the first guy was losing out by virtue of this second guy being there with his threat of, privacy invasion. We now turn to Tosfos HaKoveya. HaKoveya Zman L'Chavero. In our Gemara, we saw a discussion concerning someone who loans money and he sets a time for the debt to be paid up. The question that arose in the Gemara was, will people pay before the deadline? So, Omeri, Dafka Koveya Zman. Only in a case where there's a formal establishing of a deadline for the loan does Reish Lakish say people, borrowers, are not believed to say they paid up within the time. Avol bestam halva, however, with an unqualified loan, there's a concept of stam halva, means a loan is given and there's an understanding. It's not something spelled out or dictated, but there's an understanding that it's for 30 days. So when it comes to a stam hava, lo choshiv lei toch shloshim toch zmano, within 30 days is not considered premature payment or early payment. And that being the case, if a person received a hava, a stam hava, and the loveh, the borrower, would say, I paid you before the 30-day mark, he would be believed, even according to Reish Lakish. We now continue with the next Tosfos. Dibur HaMaschil, Uba. Uba Bezmano, a loan had been extended, had been given, and the lender came at the end of the time, Bizmano, when the loan became due. And we saw the borrower said, I paid within the time. This, by the way, is going on the Gemara that you see four lines from the bottom. And the borrower said, I paid within the time. By the way, just a very technical issue. When you see these words of Baal Bismano in your Gemara text, we had read it, but you had to, you would have added it by the virtue of the Masoras HaShas's edition. So the lender came at the deadline, and the borrower said, "I paid you within the time." Reish Lakish said, "Eino Nemon." The Nira Li Sheyesh Edim Shechayav Lo the Kovalo Zman. There are witnesses that could testify that this borrower is obligated, that that he had received a loan, and Kovalo Zman, and a formal time was established for the debt to be paid. And we just mentioned, and Tosfos just before this mentioned that all that Reish Lakish's din of a loiva of a borrower not being believed, it's only under circumstances where you had this element of kova zman. The e lav hochi, if you don't have these circumstances, namely you don't have witnesses that could testify that a loan had been incurred and a set date was made. Nehemne sheparo toch zmano. We should believe the love when he says he paid early. Bemigu the e-boy Omar, because he could have said lo hilvesa li klum. You didn't loan me anything. Believe me when I say I paid early, because I could have said you didn't loan anything to me. So now, that Migu claim is derailed by virtue of the presence of witnesses that could testify that a loan had, that a debt had been incurred on the part of the borrower. So therefore, he doesn't have this potential of saying, believe me when I say I paid early, because I could have said you didn't loan me anything, because well, their witnesses said that you did receive the loan. Oh, lo kovato li shum zman. Or if the lender had not set a date, so the borrower could have said, "You didn't set any time." Regarding the issue of lo kovato li shum zman, we should point out that in the Tosfos we just before this, in cases of loans that are not qualified by time, called stam halva, we said stam halva shloshim yom, then even Reish Lakish says that if a person would say I paid you before the 30 days arrived, he would be believed. Therefore, in order for this din of Reish Lakish to apply, we would have to have witnesses that, as we said, that could testify that a loan was extended, was given, and that a time had been established. And with that, then we say that the person is not believed to say, I paid you within the time, because otherwise, if you don't have that, the person could say, you've got to believe me that I paid within the time, because I could have either denied having received it at all, or I could have claimed that it was a loan that had no fixed time, and with loans like that, I am believed to say I paid before the 30 days. Now, it's important to note that we're describing a situation, let's say, without the witnesses. We're saying, believe me when I say I paid before the time, because I could have said something else, a migu, another claim with which I would have been believed. So believe me now that I'm saying I paid within the time. That is called a migu, the mokim chazoka. A chazoka means there's a given status that people do not pay early. That is what Reish Lakish said in no uncertain terms. And here we're suggesting that with the Migu. Believe me when I say I paid early because I could have said something else. The Gemara, the Tosfos goes on to now say, Ulekamen Miboya Lei. Later, the Gemara asks, we continue at the top of Omid Beis where the Tosfos continues. Later, the Gemara asks, E Amrinon Migu Bemokom Chazoka. Do we accept a claim of Migu when it is against, when it confronts a Chazoka? So that's a point of discussion later on. Right now, though, we are, working with the assumption that you would have been believed to say, I paid early because I could have said one of these other claims, either that, if there were no witnesses, that is, that I never received anything from you, or you never set a time. So that, as we said, will be the subject of a discussion later. Umikol mokoim ein lochiach mikan. However, do not try to prove from here. The kosover eshlokish hamalvis chaver beedim ein sorich leforo beedim. This is a point of discussion you find in other Gemaras, namely a person who extended a loan in front of witnesses. Does the payback have to be in front of witnesses? Here, Tosfos is saying, do not try to conclude from this discussion that Reish Lakish is of the opinion that even if a loan was extended in the presence of witnesses, the payback does not have to be in front of witnesses. Now, why would you think to conclude that? Well, the fact that we're believing him with the Migu, with the Migu that we just described, from that idea that we're believing him with the Migu, one might have thought that this is the conclusion to be reached, that the payback doesn't have to be in front of witnesses. Because if the payback would have been necessary in front of witnesses, he would not have been believed to say, I paid you up, even with a Migu type claim. Because we'll always ask, well, where were the witnesses? So the fact that we're willing to accept the claim, I paid you early, if there were no witnesses, based on a Migu type response, that might have led us to conclude that in general payback does not have to be in front of witnesses. Okay, that having been said, so now why should we not conclude that way? Even though we just got finished saying we would believe him with the Migu, why not conclude that ain't so chlefor b'edim? The efshur demayri hocha, it's possible that here we're speaking shehilveu shelo b'edim ela hoidelo b'fnei edim. The idea we said before that we have to say that there's no claim on the there's no room for the borrower to say I never received money. That's not because the initial loan was in front of witnesses. No, the initial loan was not in front of witnesses. There was, however, a admission on the part of the borrower that I owe you money. The afilu leman domar tzorch leforo b'edim. Even according to the opinion that says one who received a loan in front of witnesses has to pay back in front of witnesses, hani mili hecha delveil b'fnei edim eikora. That's only when those were the exact circumstances, that the initial loan was in front of witnesses. The lo hemne elo b'fnei edim. We see on the part of the lender, he didn't trust the borrower unless witnesses would be present. So in our case with Reish Lakish, we're not necessarily talking about a case where the initial loan had been in front of witnesses to begin with. Therefore, the sukya of Hamavis Chaver Beidim Ein Sorch Lefor Beidim has no relevance to the discussion involving Reish Lakish and his din. And just to repeat, because Reish Lakish and his din is including the aspect of, had there been no witnesses, we would have believed him, with the Migu, that doesn't shed any light on the topic of Malvis Chaveru Bi'Einam, because here we're talking about a case where the initial giving of the loan was not in the presence of witnesses. We said that Reish Lakish's din must be under circumstances that the borrower cannot deny having ever received. That's because at some interim point in time he admitted having a debt. He admitted owing the money. V'im tomar mikol mokoim nifshoy mehacha. You might say, well, let's nevertheless conclude from here, delo aminon migu, believe me when I say I paid within the time, de'i boy omar poratich ato. If you're going to bring up the issue of we would believe the borrower with a migu claim, let us nevertheless conclude from here that we don't say that. Believe me when I say, in other words, let's just repeat this point, that we're not believing the borrower to say he paid up within the time, so that we would therefore be able to conclude from this, shall we conclude from this, that a person is not believed to say, I paid up within the time, because I could have said, I paid you now. Why and why is that? Why would we not believe him? It must be because it's a migu b'mokom chazoka, that when you open up your claim by saying, believe me when I say I paid you within the time, which we said people don't do that. That's the claim that's against the chazoka. We don't believe him, even though he could have said, I paid you now. And the situation of Reish Lakish, by the way, is a case where the lender is claiming his money on the last day, on the due date. So we see from here that we don't believe the borrower whenever he says, I paid you within the time, because that's a migu b'mokom chazoka, even though he could have said, believe me when I say I paid you within the time, because I could have said I paid you now. The Ri responds and says, this is no evidence that we don't believe a claim of migu. Deha lo choshev migu, this claim of I know, because I could have said I paid you now, that's not considered a migu. Kevon de Mairi, since we're speaking, namely Reish Lakish's din is de kaimi b'yoyim achron shelzman. We're on that very last day. We're on that very last day, and you've got a lender saying, where's my money? The borrower is not going to say, I paid you today. What, you think the guy's going to forget that he got money just a few hours ago? Even though there is a conclusion in the end of Perek HaShoel in Bova Metzia, the Ovid Inish, the Pora B'Yoima de Mishlam Zimnei, in a different discussion where you have a renter and a tenant arguing over having received payment of the rent money. In that Gemara, the conclusion is that people do pay on the last day. That's b'yoyim de mishlam zimnei. People will pay on the last day of the debt. Mikol mokom, even so, ein ze migu. You can't rely on that to establish the claim of believe me when I say I paid you early, because I could have said that. I could have said I paid you today. Why? Because the lochotzif inish lemeima paratich ayom. People don't have the chutzpah to say I paid you today. That a person wouldn't say. A migu claim is a type of claim where believe me when I say A because I could have said B, and that B claim is a claim you would have made. But you wouldn't have made this claim, I paid you today. People don't have the chutzpah to say that, meaning, as we said before, what do you think, the lender forgot just that he received the money a few hours ago? Avol, rogil hu lomar, but people will say, paratich esmol v'shachachta. People will say, I paid you yesterday, and you forgot. That people will claim, but to claim that I paid you now, that's going too far. Therefore, and the question that was raised at the beginning of the narrow lines that we see here, v'im tomer above, that let us conclude from this discussion that we don't believe the claim of paratich b'tov zmani because he had the claim of I could have said I paid you now, when he would never have claimed such a claim. We now continue with the next Tosfos, ki hechi delo litridon. Abaye and Rava pointed out that people will pay early. Why? Why will a borrower pay early? Because sometimes people come up with the money to cover their debt, and they'll want to get the creditor off their back, so to speak, so that he doesn't come and pressure them later. That's ki hechi delo litridon. Afagav. We should point out, by the way, that this Tosfos is from the first line of Hey Omid Beis. Afagav de Beperek Yesh Bechor. Even though in Maseches Bechoros, Tnan, Bechor Besoch Shloshim Yom, if a man had a firstborn male child, the issue of Pidyon HaBen, the mitzvah Pidyon HaBen arises, and the father of that child died within 30 days, means within before the child reached 30 days of age. It says there, Becheskas Shelon Ifteh. It is assumed that the child was not redeemed. Even though you see a case of a type of debt, Pidyon HaBen, where the potential for payment for paying before he died existed, and we conclude that he did not pay. Well, wouldn't that then be a problem for Abaye and Rava? Abaye and Rava said people will pay before the due date, and from the Mishnah in Bechoros, it seems people will not pay before the due date, and as a result, the father who died before the child reached 30 days of age, which is the due date for Pidyon HaBen, the father did not pay. V'omer Ri. So in response, the Ri answers in defense of what Abaye and Rava would say, the Hasam, there in the case of Pidyon HaBen, lo shayach hai taimo de lo litridon. The consideration of the lo litridon as a reason for paying early doesn't exist. Why? The five sloyim, the money that's paid for Pidyon HaBen, is money that doesn't have a real claimer. There isn't a real creditor. Yes, a kohen is to be paid the five sloyim, but which kohen? So since there's no specific kohen that the money is due to, the father didn't have someone that would have been sitting on his head, where's the money? It's called momon shein lo tovim. It's a debt, it's money, the five sloyim, that doesn't have a particular individual laying claim to it. in general, kohanim are to be paid, but which kohen? We said it's not specific. There's no specific kohen to whom the money is paid. So therefore, in the absence of this svora of the lo litridon, Abaye and Rava can maintain their position that debts will be paid, people will pay debts early, provided there is that factor of someone coming, someone pressuring them ultimately to pay the money on time. Miu, Kashya l'Rabbi, Miperek Hashoyel. However, there is a difficulty with what the Ri said from a Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Omar, Bomi name Rabbi Yanai, the question was asked of Rabbi Yanai, Sochir menosati umaskir omer lo natati, almi lohavi raya. We made reference to this Gemara, this issue in the Tosfos just before. You have an owner, a landlord, and a tenant. Maskir, the landlord, saying, I didn't get my money. And the Sochir is saying, I paid. Who has to bring the proof? And then the issue was Amos, when does their controversy arise? If it's before the end of the rental period. Tanina, we know how the halacha goes. We know who has, we'll say, the upper hand. And you guessed it. You know what? Where they bring the proof to? Where they bring the proof from? May so'af b'sof shloshim yom. In the case of Pidyon HaBen, a father died within 30 days, b'cheskas shelo nifdeh. It's assumed that the child was not redeemed. V'hashto, if we're going to accept the Ri's approach, hechi medami lo lebechor. How can you compare the case of tenant and landlord to the case of bechor? The Hossam, in the case of Pidyon HaBen, there we say it's becheska shelo nifta because lo shayach lemeimar lo litridon. There's a there you don't have that issue of someone pressuring for a payment, and that it comes up only in a case of momon shein lo toivim, the case of a landlord and a tenant. That's Momon Sheish Lo Tovim. The landlord is Tovea, is claiming the money. So it's like it's apples and oranges. They're two different. How can you conclude a case of Momon Sheish Lo Tovim from a case of Momon Shein Lo Tovim? In the so Ulekach Tzorich Lomar. Tosfos answers. Therefore, you have to say the Bechor Nami Ika. Tirda de mitzvah. In the case of the Bechor, the money owed for Pidyon HaBen, there is also a pressure element, pressure of fulfilling the mitzvah. Not the pressure of a particular creditor trying to claim the money, but pressure to fulfill the mitzvah. Shitzorach miyad litain dezrizin umakdimen. The need to pay immediately. And people are diligent in doing so. So now, that having been said, then the case of Pidyon HaBen shows us that even though you have a case of tirda, we'll say a pressure situation. And we're paralleling this to the Maskir and the Socher, where there's a type of creditor in the picture. And what's the conclusion that you see from Bechor? What do you see? You see that when you're dealing with a situation of within the time, it's therefore assumed that the money was not paid. Ah, you might ask now, how about Abaye and Rava? Did they not say that in the case of where there's the tirda factor, there's a pressure factor, people will pay within the time? And yet you see in the case of Pidyon HaBen, to the contrary, and that's a Mishnah. How can Abaye and Rava say to the contrary? So we recommend that we continue reading the Tosfos and you'll see a Tam Acher that the Ri quotes. And it's worth mentioning that this very question was raised by Tosis in Bava Metzia, Kuf Beis Amid Beis, Dibur Maskel Becheskas. And the answer Tosis gives over there is just like the Tam Acher that the Ri gives over here. So that, let's bear in mind the issue we have to deal with. You have a case of, on the one hand, a pressure issue, a tirdo issue, and where Abaye and Rava, for example, they said, where you have that factor, people will pay within the time. And then when it comes to the Bechor, the case of Pinyan Aben, we said, Becheska Shalon Hasan, Becheska Shalon Ifte, Umeforesh Ri Tam Acher. The Hocha, in the case of a halva, of a loan, where Abaye and Rava said people will pay before the due date, Kevon the Chayav Lo, since there is a debt, Visrami Le Zuzi, and he chanced upon money, Porea Lo Tochazman, the Lo Litrudon, a person will pay before the due date, so as to avoid the bother, the pressure later on. And therefore, you have the concept of Porea Besov Zmano. Avol, Gabi Bechor, Dakati Lo Echayev Klau Adli Achar Shloshim Yom. When it comes to Pinyan Aben, the obligation doesn't arise until the 30-day mark of the child's life. It's not like a loan where as soon as you got the money, the obligation to pay back arises. We don't say as soon as a child is born, the obligation to redeem him exists. That's not so. The obligation sets in only at the 30-day mark. V'shema yomus b'sof shloshim v'yiftar. The child might die before the 30-day mark, and the father would be exempt. So the father, up till the 30-day mark, doesn't have any pressure to pay something that is not a sure debt. V'chein socher, similarly with the case of the socher. The socher too is actually like the Bechor case and not like the Malve Love situation. How is that? Shemo Yipol Beso Shel Maskir, the house that he is renting might collapse. The Tzorech Socher Lotzes, the Lo Odif Mine. Let me correct, we said that the house of the maskir, I must, just for sake of accuracy, the landlord's house might collapse, and the socher will have to leave before he actually enjoys the full term of rental. The lo odif mine, based on the svora that the tenant doesn't have more rights to the landlord's house than the landlord himself. So in these cases, Pidyon Aben and Sirus, it's not shayich to talk about payment within the time, which is not the case by Halva, where the debt is a sure debt right from the very beginning. Therefore, just to repeat, don't raise the issue of Bechor as a kasha on Abaye and Rava. And likewise, with regard to the Gemara and Bava Metzia, landlord and renter, you could bring proof to that from the case of Bechor, because those topics are similar to one another in contrast to the case of lender and borrower. Umihu kashya ha deporech l'reish lokish. A question though is raised regarding that which is asked as a question on Reish Lakish, Mekaiso Chatzur Shenofal, from the case of our Mishnah of the wall, the dividing wall that fell down Bedayik Minei, and certainly with regard to the first four Amos, we were Medayik to Ovid Inish Depara Begozimne, and that was raised as a kasha on Reish Lakish. Well, La'abaye v'rova nami tikshi, we can actually raise a question against Abaye and Rava as well. De modu hasam, Abaye and Rava conceded in the case of the Socher and the Maskir, the Lo Ovid de Pora, a person, the Socher might, the Socher will not pay before the time, as a result of the possibility of one not coming to the Chiyuv Tashlum to begin with. Well, based on the Shema Lo Yivne Zeh, let me read that again. The Lo Ovid Inish De Pora, the Shema Lo Yivne Zeh Esakoiso. Just like in the case of the tenant, he won't pay before the time because maybe the landlord will not rebuild the house that fell down. So too, with regard to the wall that fell down, maybe it will not be rebuilt. And yet, we don't say that. So even though the same svara that you have by the landlord and the tenant that would indicate a person would not pay before the time, that same svara, that same analysis would apply to the case of the wall, and yet we don't say that. And in fact, we say by the case of the wall that a person, the Gemara, of course, tried to prove that a person would pay before the time. So how is it that Abaye and Rava, in a case like the Socher and the Maskir, where it might not be rebuilt, their moida, a person would not pay within the time, and from the case of the wall, we're saying that a person would pay within the time. So that just like we, from the case of the wall, a question was raised against Reish Lakish, from the case of the wall, a question could be asked against Abaye and Rava. Umihu bekama mekoymos yochol lomar. Nevertheless, we say that we know that in many places, a response of as ulitamech could be said velo komar, and yet it's not said. So correct. Just like a question is raised against Reish Lakish from the Mishnah, the case of the wall that fell down, Reish Lakish could have said ulitamech, and according to you on Abaye and Rava, a question could be raised against your approach to the case of the landlord and the tenant from this very same Mishnah. And the Gemara, as Tosfos says, though in many places the ulitamech, and according to you such and such, could be raised, and nevertheless the Gemara doesn't raise that could have been here. So we're not denying that a question couldn't be raised against Rava. Simply the Gemara didn't spell it out. And now we continue with the retract. We just will hold off for one moment before doing the Tosfos Ilema. Let's just refresh our memory. A quote was brought in the Gemara on the top of Hey Omid Beis, from the wall up till four amos, the assumption is that a person paid. And the Gemara wanted to know, what are the circumstances? Is the other fellow saying, I paid you at the completion? That means bizmani, at the completion of the fourth amma. That would be obvious that he paid. So Tosfos, Dibra Maso I Lema, Di Omale, Paratich Bizmani. This is going on the Gemara, as you can see, second line from the top of Hayomid Beis. If it's talking about a case of the other fellow, the neighbor saying, I paid you at the time, at the completion of the fourth amma, Pshita, of course he is believed. So the Gemara went on from there to say, it must be a case where he said, I paid you within the time. But 1 second, Tosfos says, V'im tomar, v'amai, Pshita, why do you say that is so obvious, that we would believe him when he says, Parati bizmani? Why do you say Pshita, that's obvious? Ha, kevon di'ein odom porea toch zmano, since people, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, people do not pay within the time. Vanan Sahadi Shezeh Osa Koiso. And we are witness. That's like a case of a loan in front of witnesses. We bear witness that the first neighbor built the wall. So we bear witness that a debt was created. So it's like a case of a loan in front of witnesses, a debt created in front of witnesses. We serve as the witnesses. It's derech lashminan. It's necessary for the Mishnah to tell us the ein tzorech leforo b'edim, that the second fellow, the neighbor, when he says, I paid you on time, we believe him without the need for him to bring witnesses. There's a discussion we mentioned earlier, the whole concept or the whole phenomenon of a malves chavero b'edim, if an initial loan is made in front of witnesses, there is a discussion, there's a debate. Does payment have to be in front of, repayment of the loan have to be in front of witnesses or not? From here, we would conclude that issue. Ein sorach leforo b'edim. That information is valuable on its own. Therefore, why do you say that when he says, I paid you on time, we believe him, that that's obvious? It's not so obvious. I might have thought that he'd have to bring witnesses to say that, to verify his claim that I paid. And here we see that that's not necessary. So the question very simply is, why does the Gemara say pshita if the circumstances were parati bizmani, that we believe him? V'yesh lomar, Tosfos answers, dafinu madomar gabi malve chavero b'edim tzorach leforo b'edim. Even according to that opinion, that restrictive opinion, that a loan given in front of witnesses must be paid back in front of witnesses, otherwise we don't believe the borrower. Hasam, there, the need for witnesses for the repayment, mishum delohemne meikora. The malve did not trust the love from the very outset, and that's why he extended the loan in the presence of witnesses. Avohocha, with regard to the building of the wall, leka shum hoichocha delohemne. There's no indication that the first guy didn't trust the second guy. So once at the starting point, we don't see lack of trust. Hilkach pshita, then it becomes obvious the ein tzorach leforo v'edim. And that's why the Gemara said, pshita, of course we believe him when he says, I paid for it. When he's, I paid for it at the completion of the fourth Ava. And therefore the Gemara went on to the scenario of his having said, I paid you within the time, so as to present a point that needs to be presented by the Mishnah, as opposed to something that is obvious. We now continue with the next Tosfos, Dibor Maschil V'Afilu Miasmi. Now, at this point in the Gemara, this was four lines from the bottom of Hey Omid Beis, the Gemara ruled like Reish Lakish that a person does not pay within the time before the due date. As far as our marked Tosfosim are concerned, I want to point out that we have numbers that are encircled that appear as, we'll call them footnotes under the Tosfos. So we'll, as we go through the Tosfos, we may be making reference to them from time to time. Before we get into the body, the text of the Tosfos, I recommend that we look at our taktzir. We have a type of, we'll call it a concise statement as to what the topic the Tosfos will be dealing with, called a summary, if you will. And let's read it together. Chiluk Besoich Shitas Reish Lakish. we're going to be looking into a distinction, a differentiation within Reish Lakish's opinion, the Hachazoka She'ein Odo Mishalem Choyvoy Teichzmano, the Chazoka, the assumed behavior and status of people, that they do not pay within the time, Me'afsher, we saw by virtue of the ruling of the Gemara, we saw that that enables Gevias Choyv Miyasemim Shemesu Aviyam Teichzmano, a collection can be made from orphans whose father died, father had owed money and died before the due date. Collection can be made from the Yisrael Filu B'lishvua. That we saw in the Gemara. Collection can be made from them even without having to swear, which is contrary to what is the general practice when it comes to collecting debts from Yisrael. Hani Mili, here is what we will see in the Tosfos. This qualification is b'yaseimim gedolim, that collection can be made even without a shvua. That's if the yaseimim in question are adults. Avol biktanim loy goivim lechol hadeos. But when it comes to orphans that are minors, collection will not be made according to all opinions. Now, we just made reference to all opinions. There is the halacha that one does not collect from yisoimim, ketanim, is that halacha that one does not collect from yisoimim ketanim is the subject of why that is, a machlokis between Rav Papa and Rav Huna Rav Yeshua. One will not collect from Yisrael Ktanim, even though we have a situation here that it's sure that the loan had not been paid up. Well, what is the reason we don't collect from Yisrael Ktanim? Well, Rav Papa says that payment of debts is a mitzvah, priyas ba'chov mitzvah. Minors are not mitzvah obligated. They're minors. They're underage. They're not bar mitzvah. They don't have an obligation to fulfill mitzvahs. So we're not going to collect from them. Namely, we're not going to obligate them to a mitzvah that they're still not obligated in. Rav Huna of Rav Yeshua is of the opinion that the borrower may have given a mashkon type of collateral, which we call tsrori. Tsrori could be coins that are tied up in pouches that were entrusted to the malve, that in the event that when the due date comes and I don't pay, so you have this collateral. So we don't want to collect from the yisoimim ktanim out of fear that maybe there might be tsrori. So we just said that the din of the Gemara, that payment can be extracted from Yisoimim with the assumption based on Reish Lakish and Halacha that people do not pay within the time, payment can be extracted from Yisoimim Gedolim, but not when you're dealing with Yisoimim Tanim. And we're saying that the Chol Hadeos, whether you hold like Rav Popo or Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, you're not going to collect from them. The Meshech HaTosfos, as we go through the Tosfos, Muva Makoros, there are, we see a triangle. These are triangle with the point facing up, represents sources. Shemehem Ein Lahavi Raya Lechiluk Zeh. Sources from which you are not to bring a proof to this distinction. Avol Achakach, who may be Mekoros Achirim. Later, Tosfos brings other sources. We will see an inverted triangle. Shemehem Nitan Lohavi Raya. From them, you can bring proof. She Miyaseimim Ktanim B'mei Saviyim B'soich Zmano Ein Ligvois Klal L'chol Hadeus. There is no collection to be made from them according to all opinions. Rav Popa and Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua. So now we turn to the Tosfos. Dibor Maschil V'afilu Miasmi. This you'll find four lines from the bottom of Daf Hey Omid Beis. We mentioned before that numbers that you see with a full circle around them represent direct you to notes that you find under the Tosfos with the accompanying number. The Tosfos V'afilu Miasmi. V'yafagav di omur rabbonan habol ipora v'chulei, even though the rabbis have said in general that one who tries to collect from Yisoimim can collect but must swear that the debt is owed to them, in our Gemara we said not so in the case of a not so meaning no need for Shvuah to collect from the Yisoimim in the case that the father who had borrowed the money died before the loan became due. Nira de Yisoimim gedolim mairi. The halacha of the mission of collecting from them without a Shvuah is speaking about adult Yisoimim. Avol b'ktanim lo govi. But when it comes to minors that are the heirs, you will not collect. Afilu toch zmano, even where the love died within the time before the loan became due. V'lo mibaya l'Rav Papa, and it goes without saying, according to Rav Papa, the Meforesh Taimo, Danis Kokin, that explains the reason we don't collect from them mishum prius bachov mitzvah yasmi lav v'nei mevad mitzvah ninu. The reason for not collecting from the ketanim is because, in general, payment of debts is a mitzvah, and yisoimim, the minors are not they're not obligated in mitzvah fulfillment. Elo afilu l'ravuna brei d'Rav Yoshua, the meforish taimo mishum tzori. But even according to Ravuna Rav Yoshua, who says that the reason we don't collect from the Yisoimim is because maybe their father had entrusted the lender with tzori, a type of mashkon. Lo govi miyasmi ketanim afilu toch zmanu. One will not collect from minor Yisoimim, even in the case of toch zmanu, where the father died before the loan became due. And at this point, Tosfos says something that he's going to change later. You're going to see a type of wavering on the following point, but by saying this, we're saying where even if the father died within the time, before the loan became due, and there isn't so much of a chashash that the father had entrusted the lender at that point with the mashkin, with the tzori, and if there is no tzori, then hey, why not collect from the Yisoimim Ketanim? The reason for that is the reason that even though there is very little chashash of tzori, why not collect from the Ketanim? The Ein Mekablim Edim Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. In order to activate a legal claim of the debt, you would have to have witnesses that the money is owed, and that there's a legitimate claim. However, there's a law that we don't listen to testimony unless the Baal Din, unless the defendant is present. In the case, who's the defendant in this case? Well, it's the Yisoimim Ketanim that we're trying to collect the debt from, where the lender would be bringing witnesses to show us that a debt exists, but yet the defendant isn't present. The Ketanim, minors, Choshuv Shelo Bifonav, are considered as if they're not there. They're physically there, but they don't have a mind about them. They're minors. They can't argue their position. They can't offer arguments that would maybe exempt them or from having to pay. And therefore, there's no, as far as we're concerned, there's no testimony. There's no witnessing of the basic debt. And this idea is proven kidemuchach bereish perek hagozel basra in the beginning of the last perek of Bava Kamma. V'afilu niskablo edus b'chayoav nami, even in the event that testimony was said while the father was still alive that the father had borrowed money, and maybe as a result of that we should collect from the minors, but even so motzis lemeimar, there is still room to suggest, and here contrary to what we said before, but there's still room to say dechayshinu litzrori afilu toich hazman biktanim, maybe the father did entrust the malve with collateral, even in a case of tochzman, by it's in other words, the due date never arrived. The father died prematurely. There's room still to be choshish ritzroy when you're dealing with the minors. You see a bracketed section. The brackets here, and as we can see in footnote number 2, are for initial skipping purposes, to make the reading a little easier, where Tosis after the bracket says V'ein lohavi raya, I think you might notice a triangle, V'ein lohavi raya, and that, by the way, is followed again with a short bracketed section. And we mentioned earlier that at that point Tosis is going to say, don't bring proof that you can't bring proof that in our rate the Gemara's psak of collection from Yosemim is not talking about minors but talking only about adults. In other words, you can't bring proof to that distinction, as the Tosis will point out later. Just trying to give a flavor of the flow of the Gemara. Now, let's go back to the bracketed section. The last point we made was that even according to Rav Huna Brei Rav Yoshua, where we will not collect from the Yosem Tanim because of the problem of Ein Mekablim Eidim Shalobifnei Maldin, and not only that, even if there was Kabbalah Eidus when the father was still alive, we're still not going to collect from the Yosemim Ktanim because of the Chashash Tzrori, which is essentially what Rav Huna Rav Yeshua was saying all along. And now in the brackets, Kida Ashkechon Gabi Almona B'Perek Al-Sholeach, this idea of Chashashin L'Tzrori, even Toch Zmano, appears in the case of the widow. What's the case of the widow? Disnan ein hu almona nifras minichsi yisaimim elo b'shvua. A widow cannot draw support from the cannot receive payment from the property of the yisaimim unless she swears. V'taimo mishum, the reason that she has to swear in order to collect the money due to her is mishum shema hitfisa habal tzrori. Even though the reason is because maybe the husband, before he died, entrusted her with tzrori. Afal pi shehu toch hazman. Even though the collection of the ksuba is considered toch zmano. What do we mean? When he entrusted her, he was still alive. When he may have entrusted her with the collateral, he may have still been alive. When is ksuba collected from the estate? When is a ksuba paid? In the case of widowhood, ksuba is paid only after he dies. As long as the husband is alive, that's called toch zmano. It's still premature for the woman to receive her ksuba payment. And yet we see that the almona cannot collect from the heirs unless she swears. And what's the reason for that? Because of the chashash tzrori, even though it's toch hazman. Umihu me almona ein raya. However, from the case of the almona, there is no proof to say that only by Ketanim does there exist the Chashash Tzrori even Toch Zmano. So let's go over a very, very fine point. From the case of Almona, we see that there is a Chashash Tzrori Toch Zmano. However, to bring proof from Almona to the case of the to prove that in the case of the Ketanim there is also a Chashash Tzrori even Toch Zmano, that far you can't go. The Hosam Chayshinon L'Tzrori Afilu B'Gedolim, there in the case of the Almona, the Chashash Tzrori exists even if the heirs are adults, and she'll have to swear even to Yosemim Gedolim. Why? Mishum de'is law betnai beizdin. The ksuba due to the woman is by virtue of rabbinic rules. Tnai beizdin literally means conditions established by the court, but they have to with formal rabbinic edicts. Kinamir banoise. The Chayshinon Tfei, let me just go over that point. And because you have this additional factor of not just a mere debt between people, but a debt that's who's founded upon a Tanai Basin, formal rabbinic enactment, that creates a stronger sense of obligation to have it paid. And as a result of that stronger sense of obligation, then we say that in this case the husband may very well have entrusted her with collateral, because has this major obligation to fulfill not just a debt but a Tanai Beisdin type debt. Then there's precedent for that. Kidamrinan Bahanoise, as is said in Maseches Ksubis, the Chayshinon Tfei Litzor Bivnoisov Mi Bavas Ishto. This is a reference to a man who marries a woman who already had a girl from a previous marriage. And he, in the case of marrying such a woman, he obligates himself to support her daughter for the Gemara's example, is for 5 years. And what about his own daughters that he produces? So their claim to support, their claim to mazonos, is based on a tnai beisdin, so that there is a distinction between the level of, we'll say, the level obligation and the way we halachically deal with seeing to it that his own daughters get their support versus the way that the her daughter from the previous marriage gets her support. In the case of his own daughters, there is a chashash that they already received money. That's the tzrori that we're referring to. That money was set aside for them, and that's because mishum kevon de isnehu b'tanai beisdin, the need for a man to support his own daughters is a tanai based. In Amor, there's reason to suspect Tzrori at Vesinu, that father had set aside, had entrusted them with money, with Tzrori. So far, the Chashash Tzrori arises in the case of the Yisoyimim Ktanim. That's why we can't allow the Malveh to collect from the, even though their father died prematurely. But you can't bring a proof to that Chashash Tzrori from the case of the Almona. By the way, it seems to me, as is often the case when one is learning Torah, in the course of learning, one notices things that they didn't see before when they were preparing the shiur. In this case, too, it seems to me that even though we had jumped ahead to V'ein L'Havi Raya, to the triangle that we mentioned before, the truth is that it seems that the first Ein Raya point made by Tosfos is what we just learned, that you can't bring solid proof to say that by Yisaimim Ktanim there is a Chashash story from the case of Almona, and now likewise V'ein L'Havi Raya. And if you see, we have another line in brackets. Vein lo viraya, if you skip to the next line, the lo mairi b'ktanim eladafik b'gdolim, you can't bring proof that we're talking here about only about minors and not adult yisaimim. So now let's go through the whole Gemara again with the bracketed section. Vein lo viraya. In our footnote, by the way, number 4, we've noted Machas Asugraim Lahokila Lavona, the Tosfos Omer Kan, we're trying to make the understanding of Tosfos a little easier. Tosfos here is saying Ein Lahavi Raya, the Medubur Kan Bagamora, the Hagvio Rak Miyasemim Gedolim Velo Miktanim, from the Midalo Komer, from the fact that something wasn't said. So now, the Ein Lahavi Raya, we go back to our Tosfos text. Midolo, don't bring proof. Midolo, komar hocha, from the fact that it doesn't say here. Afagav the Omer Rabbanon, ein is koken lenichse yisaimim ktanim. Elohim kein ribis oicheles bohen luchule. There is a statement is seen elsewhere, but it doesn't say here in our Gemara that we don't draw from the estate held by the minor orphans unless the debt that their father had was an interest bearing debt, but in no other case, in other words, but not in any case where, let's say, the father died before the time, we would collect, because, well, that's not so. So don't bring proof from the fact that this was not said, that the only time we would collect from Yisaimim Ktanim is only if Ribis is consuming their property, they're paying off interest to the creditor, and don't bring proof from that since that wasn't said, the lo mairi b'ktanim elodafka b'gedolim, namely that which we said that we will make collection from the yisaimim toch zmano, even without a shvua, that it must be speaking only about adults. The shema mishum rav papa nokat milsei b'gedolim. It could be that Rav Papa, who spoke about the mitzvah of paying off a Baal Chov, that is, that paying off a Baal Chov is a mitzvah, and in our Gemara we spoke about paying off the collection from Yisaimim is done without a Shvua. I think I would like to go over this last point again, from the triangle that said Ein Lahavi Raya, don't try to bring proof that our Gemara makes a distinction between Tanim and Gedolim, that collection will be made only from Gedolim and not Ketanim, by virtue of the fact that the following was not mentioned. Namely, it wasn't mentioned in our Gemara, Midelo Komar Hocha, Afagav Diomar Rabbonon, Ein Nizkokin Lenichse Yisaimim Ktanim, Elohim Kein Ribis Eicheles Behem. Even though the rabbi said, we do not collect from the properties of minor orphans unless unless their property is being used to pay off a debt of interest. However, if their father died within the time of the loan, we would not pay from their property. And from the fact that that observation doesn't appear in our sukkah, and we would, from the fact that that observation doesn't appear, we would say that our sugya is not talking about ketanim, but only about gedolim. The shema, the reason is that the reason that distinction between ribbis oichelus mem, that we pay from nichsei yishem ketanim, and not meis besorch smano. Why was that not mentioned in our Gemara? Teshamo mishum Rav Popa nokat milsei. The idea of collecting from Yesoimim mentioned in our Gemara was only because of Rav Popa's observation that in general we don't collect from Yesoimim Tana because of the their lack of obligation in the mitzvah, and therefore gevias chayv from yisoimim without a shvua would apply only in the case of gedolim. Let's read that again. The shema mishum Rav Popa nokat milsei begedolim. And I want to emphasize here the idea of collecting from the yisoimim without a shvua is only because they are b'nei mitzvah, but not to the exclusion of ketanim. In other words, we don't see from here that you would not collect from ketanim. Maybe you would. So you can't bring this as proof to the distinction between that Tosfos was trying to make between yisoimim gedolim and yisoimim ketanim. Inami no kanahu da boli pora. Our Gemara mentioned habol lipora minichs yisoimim leifel b'shvua was mentioned over here. La'ashminan de govi afilu below shvua, to inform us that it, because of Reish Lakish, we will collect in the case of toch zmano even without a shvua. So that once again, this idea of collecting was cited in the Gemara simply to get to the point that because of Reish Lakish we will collect even without a shvua, but not to memayet, not to the exclusion of collecting from ketanim. V'ein lahavi raya, and likewise one cannot bring proof that we would not collect from ketanim l'chol adeyas. Mishile de mechilten, from the end of our mesechta here, but in the Baba Basra de Komar, there the Gemara says, my binayu de Rav Popa of Rav Huna Yeshua. What's the difference between Rav Popa says we don't collect from Yisoimim Ketanim because they're not b'nei Evan Mitzvah, versus Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, who says because of the Chashash story? And there the Gemara asks, what's the difference between them? V'lo ka'omar ika b'nayu, the point of difference would be kagon de mis loive toich hazman, where the loive, the father, died before the loan became due, and then there's no chashash story. De la Rav Huna Govi, and then according to Rav Huna, a collection would be made even from ketanim, as opposed to Rav Popa, who would say you don't collect because they're not b'nei mitzvah. Now, from the fact that that distinction was not made at the end of this masechta, there was room to think that this would be proof that even according to Rav Huna, you would not collect from the assignment. Nevertheless, don't bring proof from that Gemara that l'chol hadeis you would not collect from the assignment tanim. Daha Rav Huna v'Rav Popa Omar b'shmeitzin. Rav Huna and Rav Popa appear in our Gemara on the first wide line. The less lehu chazaka the Reish Lakish. They don't hold to begin with from the chazaka of Reish Lakish of people not paying within the time. Therefore, a person, their father, that is, might have paid within the time. And that's the reason not to collect from the assignment. V'oid, furthermore, the bekama mekaymos yocholim so iko b'nayot tuvo v'eno choshesh lomar el adover echad oshnayim. If you were going to try to say the fact that a distinction wasn't made, namely our case of the assignment time and tells man it wasn't used as a distinction, it could have been a distinction. And we could have ended up saying that according to Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, they would have to pay. But the Gemara doesn't always spell out all the distinctions. So to bring proof from the lack of the statement of a particular distinction is not reliable. Kidam Rinan Bahaminiach Gabi Plukta de Yusham Hashor. As far as this idea of several other distinctions could have been made and are not stated, you find in the third parak of Bava Kama regarding that particular topic that is featured here simply as Yusham Hashor. We're not going to get into that Gemara, but simply it's cited by Tosfos as an illustration of Gemaras where distinctions could have been made and are not. Mihu yesh lahavi raya dafilu Rav Huna. That's Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua. You can, yes, bring proof that even Rav Huna, the meforish taimo mishum tsrori, who explained that the reason you don't collect from yisayim ktanim is because of tsrori, lo gavi miyisayim ktanim afilu tochazman, collection will not be made from them even within the time before the maturation of the loan, even though at that point there isn't such a chashash of tzrori. From where can we bring proof to that even according to Rav Huna, even in cases where there isn't a strong chashash of tzrori, we still will not collect from the ketanim? De porich alei de Rav Asi beperik shum hayesaimim in Maseches Erech and Daf Chof Beis, where the Gemara talks about the topic of, we'll say, auctioning off properties of orphans in order for their debts to be paid off. Now, the Tosfos mentioned the Purach Alei to Rav Asi. A question is raised against Rav Asi. What did Rav Asi say? So in footnote number 9, we have the following. The Omar, Rav Asi said, Ein iskokin l'nichsi yisoymim ketanim elo in kain ribus echelos. We do not sell off properties of minor orphans unless interest is consuming them, unless their father had taken out an interest-bearing loan. And that's the only reason, says Rav Asi, that we would sell off the properties of nechosim of yisoymim ketanim, and not because of any other reason. Yesh letzayin, the hosam mufia gam daito shu Rabbi Yochanan. In that sukya, Rabbi Yochanan also appears regarding selling off properties of Yisoimim. The moisif the im yesh mizonos shemeshamim lalmono minichseim gam zesi bala mechirosam. If there is a widow that is being sustained by her husband's properties, and right now they're in the hands of the Yisoymim Ketanim, that's also a reason to sell off for the benefit of that widow. So the Gemara there in Erechin asks on Rav Asi, who said that only because Ribbis Achelsman is reason for selling off the properties. So a question there in Erechin is raised against Rav Asi, the dochik Allah, the shnuye, and he was let's say pressured into answering that in that case of the selling off of the assignment properties was bebal chov, it was talking about an idol worshipper lender who lent their father money, shekibel alav lezu velo lezu, that accepted upon himself the idea of waiting and not demanding immediate payment, waiting for the auction period to finish, but he didn't accept upon himself to forego the interest. So in order to maintain Rav Asi's opinion in light of the Mishnah there in Maseches Erechin, he came up with that, that the reason for the sale over there was that you were dealing with an idol worshiper lender who accepted to wait for the auction period to complete 30 days or 60 days, whatever the details are spelled out over there, but he was not going to forego on the ribbis. V'lo mishani, in order to answer on behalf of Ravasi, the Gemara there does not say, hocho b'maya skinon b'shelo higia hazman b'chaye ho'av. If the Mishnah there says that we sell off Yosemite properties, it could have said, well, it's talking about a case where the father died premature before the loan became due, where it's clear that the debt had not been paid off. Well, so what do you see from that? That even in that case, the properties would not have been sold off. Even though it's a sure bet that the properties, that the debt was not paid off, we would not have sold the properties of the Yisraimim Tanim. So from that, we, as Tosfos says, we can bring proof that even according to Rav Huna, Breda Yeshua, namely according to all days, not only Rav Papa, but even according to Rav Huna, we would not collect from the Yisraimim Ketanim. The Ein Lomar, Deahi Sugya, and don't try to deflect this as a good proof by saying that Sugya Sovra Ketaima de Rav Papa, that Sugya is going within Rav Papa, who spoke about mitzvah, but meaning that the reason that we don't make mention of collecting from the Yisraimim Ketanim is because they're not b'nei meva mitzvah, but according to Rav Huna, their collection would have been made from them. Why should we not say that Gemara is going only within Rav Papa's opinion? Toha b'maskona mishani, because there, at the end of that discussion, it says, how do you know that there's a debt? K'shechayev moide, where the one who owes the money concedes. And that establishes that there is definitely a debt that needs to be paid off. V'hai shinuya, that response of k'shechayev moide, lesa aliba detaima de Rav Papa, would have no relevance according to Rav Papa. Because according to Rav Papa, once we describe the Yisraimim Ketanim as being Einon ben Mei mitzvah, we wouldn't have sold off their properties to pay off the debt, even in a case of Kishechayev Moida, where the borrower admitted to owing the money. So from the fact that the debt is paid off based on Shechayev Moida, that there was an admission of the debt, that shows that we're not, that the sugi there is not according to Rav Papa. So the sugi there was according to not only Rav Papa, but according to Rav Huna Rebbe Yeshua as well. And yet the only reason that the properties of the Yisraimim Ketanim were sold off is because of ribis ocheles bohem. But otherwise, even though you might have a case of meis toich zmano, we wouldn't have collected from the Yisraimim Ketanim. V'chein yesh lochiach migufei de milsei de Ravasi. From Ravasi's very words, we see that we would not collect from Yisraimim Ketanim even toich zmano. De ka'omar, Ravasi said the following: Elo in kain ribis ocheles ben. The only reason for selling off your properties Yisraimim Ketanim is because interest was consuming them. An interest, their father had taken an interest-bearing loan. That's the only reason we would sell off their properties, but not a case where the father died before the loan was due, and we know that the debt is still outstanding because a person doesn't pay off before the time. Still, we would not have sold. That's the proof that a distinction is made between that in the case of Yisraimim Ketanim, under no circumstances will we sell off their properties. They will not pay off even in a case where the father died before it became due. Now, we made mention before of Shitas Rabbi Yochanan in that Gemara in Erechin. Rabbi Yochanan Eino Mosif. Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to reasons for selling off properties of Yisrael Ketanim, he adds only one other case. Ki'im Ksubas Isha Mishumazoni. Another reason, not only Ribbis Achel Sven, but the case of paying off the Mizonos for a widow. But he too, Rabbi Yochanan too, does not make reference to a case of the father dying before the loan became due. Mashma Balchov lo mishtakach b'shum inyan defrayim. When it comes to a loan, under no circumstances would it be paid off, namely when you're dealing with the Yisrael Ketanim. Would it be paid off, even if meis toch zmano? Umistamo Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan islehu chazaka de Reish Lakish. It's most likely that between Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan, they both agree that to Reish Lakish's principle that a person does not pay before the time. Dahachi hilchisa. That's the way we paskin kideposik b'shmeitzin, as our Gemara itself rules. So it's only reasonable to assume that Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan agree with Reish Lakish on that point. So that even though it's, when you look at them, it's clear that the loan has not been paid off yet, we will not sell off the property of Yisrael Ketanim for that purpose, as Tosfos mentioned at the very, very beginning. V'yod, and furthermore, I less lehu chazaka de Reish Lakish. If you're going to say that Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan do not hold from Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yochanan would say disagrees, him came along to Reish Lakish bar bo devarim, and would come out that in the Shas we know that we generally speaking paskin, we rule like Rabbi Yochanan, and it's said in Yevamos that we paskin like Reish Lakish over Rabbi Yochanan in three areas. But if you're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish on this matter as well, namely paying off loans prematurely, it would come out then that we hold like Reish Lakish on four counts. Our sugya being a fourth example. Ubereish hacheleitz lo posik rova kavosei elo betlas. And in the beginning of Perek HaCholitz in Yevamos, Rava rules like Reish Lakish only on three points. Namely, according to Rava, we follow Reish Lakish over Reb Yochanan only on three points. Therefore, it must be that regarding this matter, Reish Lakish and Reb Yochanan actually agree. Afagav the Rava vaday polaga Reish Lakish b'shmeitzin. Even though Rava himself disagrees with Reish Lakish in our sukya, we had Abaye and Rava together, they were arguing on Reish Lakish, so even though Rava himself disagrees with Reish Lakish, mikol makom gam ledidon muchach de lo kaimalon ke Reish Lakish ela betlas. Even according to us, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan disagree only on three matters, not on a fourth matter, i.e. not on this case of payment prematurely. Ubeperek arba v'chamisha, in that perek in Bava Kama, de porach l'Reb Yochanan. A question is raised on Reb Yochanan regarding a shor of a yosom, an ox of an orphan that caused damage, and he therefore has to pay. And he said, the Omar me alias yisoimim, that payment is made from the properties of the orphans. Ah, v'omer Rabbi Yochanan ein iskokin lenichse yisoimim elo leksubas isha. But how can you say that for the payment of damage, the yisoimim will have to pay, when Rabbi Yochanan himself says we don't collect from the yisoimim, that is the yisoimim tanim, other than for the case of ksubas isha, which we mentioned earlier. Afagav de kaimalon de taimo Have mishum tzori, v'hasa b'shor shenogach lo shayach tzori. Even though we hold that the reason we don't collect from the yisoimim is because of the possibility that we say loans owed by their father is not collected from the yisoimim because their father may have entrusted collateral, and in the case of shor shenogach, that is not shayach. And therefore, you might argue, well, since the reason for non-payment doesn't apply over there, therefore, it's understandable why Rabbi Yochanan would say they have to pay for the damage. Mikomokom paruch shapir. Still, it's a good question that the Gemara asks over there. The Rabbi Yochanan is lay ein is gokin v'chol inyan. Rabbi Yochanan holds we don't ever collect from them in all matters. Afilu b'milve habo. Machmas atzmo delo shayach tzori, even in the case of a loan that he himself had become indebted to, where the issue of suspecting tzori doesn't arise. That's a suspicion that maybe their father entrusted collateral, but not in a loan that he himself, that the Yosem himself became indebted to. So Rabbi Yochanan holds ein is gokin b'chol inyan. Mitam de'ein mekablin edus shelo b'fnei baldin, based on what we saw earlier, that we don't accept testimony to as to the existence of a debt unless the baldin is present, and the katan, the minor, as if he's not there, and therefore the Gemara there in Vava Kama that raises a question: how could it be that Rabbi Yochanan says that the yosoim has to pay for damage his ox caused, when Rabbi Yochanan says ein is kokin l'nichsi yosoimim, unless it's a matter of ksubas isha. Therefore, even in a case where there's no chashash of tzori, still we wouldn't collect from them, and therefore the Gemara there in Bava Kama raises a very solid question. Toisvis dibur hamasil afal gav relates to the Gemara three lines from the bottom of Daf Hey Omid Beis. The Gemara said, "Af agav dem rabbonon haboli par minichsi yosaimim lo yipar lo b'shvua." One who comes to collect from the property of orphans collects only if he swears ahead of time. And then the Gemara pointed out, but in the case of a debt incurred by their father where he died before it became mature, the creditor can collect from them even without a shvua. V'tanyo nami b'peraka koisev, and likewise a brisa appears in peraka koisev in Ksubas where it says avol ma eseh sharei omru chachomim habol lipora v'chulei. Now you notice in our markings we've dashed underlined sharei omru chachomim. Mashma, from that expression it appears where within a brisa, which is Tanaic literature, considered a bit later than the Mishnayos, it says Shaharei Omru Chachomim. It was said by the sages that one who comes to collect from Yisoimim, Mashmashi Mishnah Beshumokim. It appears then that it must be a Mishnah, something that would predate the Brisa. It must be a Mishnah somewhere. Fetemo Heicho Omru Chachomim. Where did the Chachomim say that? Where do you see a Mishnah that says Habol Lipara Minichse Yisoimim Elo Yipara Labishwa? The Me'almona, from the case of the Almona that comes to collect her Ksuba from Yisoimim, that she needs to swear Leko Lameilaf. You cannot use that as a basis. The Shiny Almona, the case of the Almona is different. The Isla B'Tanai Bezdin V'Chashinin Letzori Tvei. This, of course, is that which we saw in the long Tosfos that we did in Dibur HaMasel V'Afilu Miyasmi. We saw reference to this in the first quarter of that Tosfos, where Tosfos said, from Almoni you can't bring a raya because they were really choshish for Tzrori. So that's not a source for Habol Lipora Minichsi Yisoimim, because there's a strong because she has such a strong claim to the ksuba payment, she has it by virtue of Tanai Bezin, it's very likely that she was entrusted with Tzori. And so she already received a potential form of payment, therefore if she comes to collect, she better swear, but not a standard Baal Chov, not a standard creditor. The Omer Ri. So the Ri explains, and you'll notice we have a house marking whereby Tosfos cites Tanaic sources, Brises, I mean, I should say Mishnayos, where we see this law. Midisnan beperka koisev, gabi mi shemes, viniach isha ubalchov, and the Mishnah says viyorshim, a man died leaving a debt to a woman, his wife, a debt to a creditor, and he has heirs. Vahoyo lo milvel pikonu biyadachirim. This man that died had money owed to him. Milvel, a loan that was due to him. The deceased had lent money, and the deceased also had entrusted items that were in others' possession. So that you have the deceased with a means of paying either the woman or the creditor or giving it to the heir, to his heirs. And it says, Yitnu liyorshim. The milve or the bikoron are given to his heirs. Shekulam tsrichim shvua. The woman who comes to collect, the creditor that comes to collect, in order to collect from those yesoimim, from those heirs, from those orphans, they would have to swear. Now notice we dashed underline tsrichim shvua. So that you here you see evidence of someone who's going to collect from them, they would have to swear. And that's in a Mishnah. V'ein ha'yorshim tzrichin shvua. In order for the deceased heirs to collect the pikadon or that milveh, they don't have to swear. And therefore, since they collect even without swearing, they get the milveh pikadon as opposed to the isha and baal chov. So we see reference to collecting from yesoimim needing to swear. V'od tanan b'shvuas. And likewise, it says in Masechet Shavuos, a Mishnah says, "V'chein ha'yesoimim min ha'yesoimim." Those are heirs of a creditor that come to collect from heirs of a borrower of a debtor. Lo yifru elo b'shvua v'chule. These heirs of the malve can collect the debt owed to their father from the yesoimim of the loive. Only if they take a shavua. And what's the shavua? Shavua shelo motzinu ben shtoroysev shalabo shishtar zeporo. They would have to swear, the heirs of the creditor would have to swear, that we did not find amongst our father's documents that this debt was paid up, that this shtar, this document, this loan document was paid up. Alma, what do we see from here? We see that gam ho'av hoya nishba, the av is the malva himself, would have had to swear she'eno porua, that the debt was not paid up. In other words, by the fact that the heirs of the creditor would have to swear to collect from the yesoimim, that indicates that the malva himself would have had to swear in order to collect from the yesoimim. So what do you see? You see that one who comes to collect from yesoimim has to swear. Mikan mashma she'im hoitzi shtar chov al chaveiro. From here, it would appear then that a malve, a creditor who produces a document, a loan document, the omale and the loiva, the borrower, would say, ishtabali delo poratich begozine. I want you to swear that I didn't pay you within the time of the debt. Ein tzorich la'asois shvua. The malve doesn't have to swear. In other words, the malve pulls out a shtar, and the lova insists on an oath that I did not pay you within the time. The malve wouldn't have to swear, because if the malve would have to swear that, then the the Malva would have to swear likewise to the Yesoimim. And here the emphasis is on Bego Zimne, means within the time. And in our Sugya, we see that a one who tries to collect from the Yesoimim Bego Zimne within the time, according to Reish Lakish, if you're coming to collect from the Yesoimim, where the Lova died before the loan became due, no swearing is necessary. So from our Sugya, we see this conclusion that a Malva who was told by the Lova, swear that I didn't pay you within the time, the Malva doesn't have to swear. And that is manifest by the fact that in our Sugya, the Malva, when the debt is begozimne, what's within the time, is able to collect from the Yorshim even without swearing. So it must be that their father could not have imposed on the Malva an oath like that either. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.